Chapter 11. My People. I sit with my legs dangling off the edge of the hangar, watching the city beneath teem with life. The clamour of a thousand hushed voices rises to me like a sea of leaves brushing together. The refugees know I'm alive. Sling blades have been painted on walls, on roofs. The desperate, silent cry of a lost people. For 6 years I've wanted to be back among them. But looking down, seeing their plight, remembering Kieran's words, I feel myself drowning in their hope. They expect too much. They don't understand that we can't win this war. Ares even knew we could never go toe-to-toe with gold. So how am I supposed to lift them up? To show them the way? I'm afraid. Not just that I can't give them what they want, but that by releasing the truth, Severo's burned the boat behind us. There's no going back for us. So what does that mean for my family? For my friends and these people? I felt overwhelmed by these questions, by Severo's use of my carving, that I stormed out without a word. It was petulant. Behind me, Ragnar moves past my wheelchair and slides down next to me, legs dangling off the edge like mine. His boots, comically large. The breeze of a passing shuttle catches the ribbons in his beard. He says nothing, at ease with the silence. It makes me feel safe, knowing he's here, knowing he's with me. Like I thought I would feel near Severo. But he's changed. Too much weight in that helm of Ares. When I was a boy, we always wanted to know who the bravest of us was, I say. We'd sneak out of our homes at night and go down into the deep tunnels and stand with our backs to the darkness. You could hear the pit vipers if you were quiet. But you could never tell how close they were. Most boys would break and run after a minute, maybe five. I always stood the longest. Taleo found out about our game. I shake my head. Now, I don't think I'd last a minute. Because you know now how much there is to lose. Ragnar's black eyes hold the shadows of a vast history. Nearly 40, he's a man who was raised in a world of ice and magic, sold to the gods to buy life for his people, and served as a slave longer than I've been alive. How much better does he understand life than I do? Do you still miss home? Your sister? I ask.
I do. I long for the early snow in the throes of summer. How it stuck to the fur of Seffi's boots as I carried her on my shoulders to see Nilgir break through the spring ice.
Nilgir was a dragon who lived under the world tree of the old Norse societies and spent his days gnawing at the roots of Yggdrasil. Many obsidian tribes believe he comes up from the deep waters of their sea to break the ice that blocks their harbours and open the veins of the pole for their spring raiding boats. In honour of him, they send the bodies of their criminals to the deep in a holiday called Ostara, the first day of true spring light.
I sent friends to the spires and the ice to spread your word, to tell my people their gods are false. They are in bondage, and we will soon come to free them. They will know Io's song.
Io's song. It seems so fragile and silly now. I don't feel her anymore, Ragnar. I glance behind us to the oranges and reds who spare glances our direction as they work on the rip wings in the hangar. I know they think I'm their link to her, but I lost her in the darkness. I used to think she was watching me. I used to talk to her. Now, she's a stranger. I hang my head. So much of this is my fault, Ragnar. If I hadn't been so proud, I would have seen the signs. Fitchner would be alive. Lorne would be alive.
You think you know the strands of fate?
He laughs at my arrogance.
You do not know what would have happened if they lived.
I know I can't be what these people need. He frowns.
And how would you know what they need when you are afraid of them? When you can't even look upon them?
I don't know how to answer. He stands abruptly and extends a hand to me.
Come with me.
The hospital was once a cafeteria. Rows of gurneys and makeshift beds, now fillet, along with coughs and solemn whispers, as red, pink and yellow nurses in yellow scrubs move through the beds, checking the patients. The back of the room is a burn ward, separated from the rest of the patients by plastic containment walls. A woman screaming on the other side of the plastic, fighting a nurse as he tries to give her an injection. Two other nurses rush to subdue her. I feel swallowed by the sterile sadness of the place. There's no gore, no blood dripping on the floor. But this is the aftermath of my escape from Attica. Even with a carver as good as Mickey, they won't have the resources to mend these people. The wounded stare up at the stone ceiling, wondering what life will be like now. That's what this feeling is in the room. Trauma. Not of flesh, but lives and dreams interrupted. I'd retreat from the room, but Ragnar rolls me forward to the edge of a young man's bed. He watched me as I came in. His hair is short, his face plump and awkward with a prominent underbite.
What's what?
I ask, my voice remembering the flavour of the mine. He shrugs.
Just dancing time away, here?
I hear.
I extend a hand. Darrow.
Of Lycos.
We know.
His hands are so small he can't even wrap his fingers around mine. He chuckles at the ridiculousness of it.
Varno, of Karos.
Night or day?
Day shift, you pigger.
I look like some saggy-faced night digger.
Well, you never know these days.
True enough.
I'm Omicron, third drill boy, second line. So that was your chaff I'd be dodging deep.
He grins.
Helldivers always looking themselves in the eye.
He makes a lewd motion with his hands.
Someone's got to teach you to look up.
We laugh.
How much did it hurt?
He asks, nodding to me. At first I think he's asking about what the jackal did. Then I realize he's referring to the sigils on my hands. The ones I've tried to cover with my sweater. I unveil them now.
Manic shit, that.
He flicks it with his finger. I look around, suddenly aware that it's not just Vanno watching me. It's everyone. Even on the far side of the room in the burn unit, Reds pushed themselves up in their beds to look at me. They can't see the fear inside. They see what they want. I glance at Ragnar, but he's busy speaking to an injured woman.
Holiday.
She nods to me, grief still very much at home on her face for her lost brother. His pistol is on her bedside, his rifle leaning against the wall. The sons recovered his body during the rescue so he could be buried.
How much did it hurt?
I repeat.
Well,
imagine falling into a claw drill, Vanno. A centimetre at a time. First goes the skin, then the flesh, then bone. Easy stuff.
Vanno whistles and looks down at his missing legs with a tired, almost bored expression. Didn't even feel this.
My suit injected enough hydrofoam to knock out one of them.
He nods to Ragnar and draws air through his teeth.
At least I still got my prick.
Ask him,
a man beside him urges.
Vano,
shut up.
Vano sighs.
Boys have been wondering, did you get to keep it?
Keep what?
It.
He looks at my groin. Or did they, you know,
make it proportionate?
You really want to know?
I mean, not for personal reasons, but I've got money riding on it.
Well,
I lean forward seriously. So do Vano and his bedmates nearby.
If you really want to know, you should ask your mother.
Vano stares at me intensely, then explodes into laughter. His bedmates laugh and spread the joke to the far edges of the room. And in that tiny moment, the mood shifts. The suffocating sterility cut through with amusement and crude jokes. Whispering suddenly seems ridiculous here. It fills me with energy to see the shifting tide and realize it's because of a single laugh. Instead of retreating from the eyes, from the room, I move away from Ragnar, down the lines of cots, to mingle more with the injured, to thank them, to ask where they're from and learn their names. And this is where I thank Jove that I've a good memory on me. Forget a man's name and he'll forgive you. Remember it and he'll defend you forever. Most call me Sir or Reaper. And I want to correct them and tell them to call me Darrow, but I know the value of respect, of distance between men and leader. Because even though I'm laughing with them, even though they're helping heal what's been twisted inside me, they are not my friends. They are not my family. Not yet. Not until we have that luxury. For now, they are my soldiers, and they need me as much as I need them. I'm their Reaper. It took Ragnar to remind me. He favours me with an ungainly grin, so pleased to see me smiling and laughing with the soldiers. I've never been a man of joy, or a man of war, or an island in a storm. Never an absolute, like Lorne. That was what I pretended to be. I am, and always have been, a man who is made complete by those around him. I feel strength growing in myself. A strength I haven't felt in so long. It's not only that I'm loved. It's that they believe in me. Not the mask, like my soldiers at the Institute. Not the false idol I built in the service of Augustus. But the man beneath. Lycos may be gone. Io may be silent. Mustang a world away. And the sun's on the brink of extinction. But I feel my soul trickling back into me as I realize I am finally home. With Ragnar at my side, I return to the command room where Severo and Dancer are hunched over a blueprint. Theodore is in the corner exchanging correspondences. They turn as I enter, surprised to see the smile on my face and to see that I'm now standing. Not on my own, but with Ragnar's help. I left the chair in the hospital and had him guide me back to the command room I fled only an hour prior. I feel a new man, and I may not be what I was before the darkness, but perhaps I'm better for it. I have humility I didn't have before. I'm sorry for how I acted, I say to my friends. This has been overwhelming. I know you've done the best you can, better than anyone could, given the circumstances. You've all kept hope alive, and you've saved me, and you saved my family. I pause, making sure they know how much that means to me. I know you didn't expect me to come back like this. I know you thought I'd come back with wrath and fire. But I'm not what I was. I'm just not. I say as Severo tries to correct me. I trust you. I trust your plans. I want to help in whatever way I can, but I can't help you like this. I hold up my thin arms. So I need your help with three things.
Always so dramatic, Severo says. What are your demands, Princess?
First, I want to send an emissary to Mustang. I know you think she betrayed me, but I want her to know I'm alive. Maybe there's some chance it'll make a difference, that she'll help us. Severo snorts.
We already gave her the opportunity once. She almost killed you and Rags.
But she did not, Ragnar says. It is worth the risk if she will help us. I will go as emissary so she does not doubt our intentions.
Like hell, Severo says. You're one of the most wanted men in the system. Gold have shut down all unauthorized air traffic, and you won't last 2 minutes in a spaceport, even with a mask.
We'll send one of my spies, Theodora says. I have one in mind. She's good, and 100 kilograms less conspicuous than you, Prince of the Spires. The girl's in a port city already.
Evie, Dancer asks.
Just? Theodora looks my direction. Evie's done her best to make amends for the sins of the past. Even ones that weren't hers. She's been very helpful. Dancer, I'll make the arrangements for travel and cover, if that's all right with you.
It's all right, Severo says quickly, though Theodora waits for Dancer to nod his agreement.
Thank you, I say. I also need you to bring Mickey back to Tinos.
Why? Dancer asks.
I need him to make me into a weapon again. Severo cackles.
Now we're talking. Get some man-killing meat on your bones. No more of this anorexic scarecrow shit.
Dancer shakes his head. Mickey's 500 clicks away in Varos, working on his little project. He's needed there. You need calories, not a carver. In the state you're in, it could be dangerous.
Reap can handle it. We can get Mickey and his equipment here by Thursday, Severo says.
Virani has been consulting with him anyway about your condition. He'll be tickled pink to see you.
Dancer watches Severo with strained patience. And the last request?
I grimace.
I have a feeling you're not going to like this one.
Chapter 12. The Julii. I find Victra in an isolated room with several sons guarding the door. She lays with her feet sticking off the edge of a medical cot, watching a hollow at the foot of her bed as society news channels drone on about the Valiant Legion attack on a terrorist force that destroyed a dam and flooded the lower Mistos River Valley. The flooding has forced 2 million brown farmers out of their homes. Greys deliver aid packages from the backs of military trucks. Easily could have been Reds who blew up the dam. Or it could have been the Jackal. At this point, who knows? Victor's white gold hair is bound in a tight ponytail. Every limb, even the paralyzed legs, is cuffed to the bed. Not much trust here for her kind. She doesn't look up at me as the hollow story kicks over to a profile on Roque Au Fabii, the poet of Deimos and the newest heartthrob of the gossip circuit. Searching through his past, conducting interviews with his senator mother, his teachers before the Institute, showing him as a boy on their country estate.
Roque always found the natural world to be more beautiful than cities, his mother says for the camera. It's the perfect order in nature that he so admired, how it formed effortlessly into a hierarchy. I think that's why he loved the society so dearly, even then.
That woman would look much better with a gun in her mouth,
Victra mutters, muting the sound.
She's probably said his name more in the last month than she did his entire childhood, I reply.
Well, politicians never let a popular family member go to waste. What was it Roke once said about Augustus at a party? Oh, how the vultures flock to the mighty, to eat the carcasses left in their wake.
Victra looks at me with her flashing, belligerent eyes. The madness I saw in them earlier has retreated, but not vanished entirely. It lingers, like mine.
Might as well have been talking about you.
That's fair, I say.
Are you leading this little pack of terrorists?
I had my chance to lead. I made a mess of it. Severo is in charge.
Severo? She leans back. Really?
Is that funny?
No. For some reason, I'm not surprised at all, actually. Always had a bigger bite than bark. The first time I saw him, he was kicking Tactus's ass.
I step closer. I believe I owe you an explanation.
Oh, hell, can't we skip this part? She asks. It's boring.
Skip it? She sighs heavily.
Apologies, recrimination, all the trifling shit people muddle through because they're insecure. You don't owe me an explanation.
How do you figure?
We all enter a certain social contract by living in this society of ours. My people oppress your tiny kind. We live off the spoils of your labour, pretending you don't exist. And you fight back, usually very poorly. Personally, I think that's your right. It's not good or evil, but it's fair. I'd applaud a mouse that managed to kill an eagle, wouldn't you? Good for it. It's absurd and hypocritical for Golds to complain now, simply because the Reds finally started fighting well.
She laughs sharply at my surprise.
What, darling? Did you expect me to scream and rant and piss on about honour and betrayal, like those walking wounds Cassius and Roke?
A little, I say. I would.
That's because you're more emotional than I am. I'm a Julii. Cold runneth through my veins.
She rolls her eyes when I try to correct her.
Don't ask me to be different because you need validation, please. It's beneath the both of us.
You've never been as cold as you pretend to be, I say.
I've existed long before you ever came into my life. What do you really know of me? I am my mother's daughter.
You're more than that.
If you say so.
There's no artifice to her, no coy manipulation. Mustang's all smirks and subtle plays. Victor's a wrecking ball. She softened before the triumph, let her guard down. But now it's back, and it's as alienating as when I first met her. But the longer we speak, the more I see her hair is shot with grey, not just pale gold. Her cheeks are hollow. Her right hand, the one on the opposite side of the cot, clenching the sheets.
I know why you lied to me, Darrow, and I can respect it. But what I don't understand is why you saved me in Attica. Was it pity? A tactic?
It's because you're my friend, I say.
Oh, please.
I would rather have died trying to get you out of that cell than let you rot in there. Trigg did die getting you out.
Trigg?
One of the Greys who were behind me when we came into your cell. The other one is his sister.
I didn't ask to be saved,
she says bitterly, her way of washing her hands of Trigg's death. She looks away from me now.
You know, Antonia thought we were lovers, you and I. She showed me your carving. She taunted me, as if it would disgust me to see what you are, to see where you came from, to see how I'd been lied to.
And did it?
She sneers. Why would I care what you were? I care about what people do. I care about truth. If you had told me, I wouldn't have done a single thing differently. I would have protected you.
I believe her. And I believe the pain in her eyes.
Why didn't you tell me?
because I was afraid. But I wager you told Mustang.
Yes.
Why her and not me? I at least deserve that.
I don't know.
It's because you're a liar. You said I wasn't wicked in the hall, but you think it deep down. You never trusted me.
No, I say. I didn't. That's my mistake. And my friends have paid for it with their lives. That guilt was my only company in the box he kept me in for 9 months. By the look in her eyes, I know she didn't know what had been done to me. But now I've been given a second chance at life. I don't want to waste it. I want to make amends with you. I owe you a life. I owe you justice. And I want you to join us.
Join you? She says with a laugh. As a son of Ares?
Yes.
You're serious?
She laughs at me. Another defense mechanism.
I'm not really into suicide, darling.
The world you know is gone, Victor. Your sister has stolen it from you. Your mother and her friends have been wiped out. Your house is now your enemy, and you're an outcast from your own people. That is the problem with this society. It eats its own. It pits us against one another. You have nowhere to go.
Well, you really know how to make a girl feel special.
I want to give you a family that will not stab you in the back. I want to give you a life with meaning. I know you're a good person, even if you laugh at me for saying it, but I believe in you. Yet, all that doesn't matter. What I believe, what I want. What matters is what you want. She searches my eyes.
What I want?
If you want to leave here, you can. If you want to stay on this bed, you can. Say what you want, and it's yours. I owe you that. She thinks for a moment.
I don't care about your rebellion. I don't care about your dead wife. Or about finding a family, or finding meaning. I want to be able to sleep without them jacking me full of chemicals, Dara. I want to be able to dream again. I want to forget my mother's caved-in head and her vacant eyes and her twitching fingers. I want to forget Adrius laughing. And I want to repay Antonia and Adrius for their hospitality. I want to stand above them and that piece of shit, Roke, as they weep for the end, as I gouge out their eyes and pour molten gold into the sockets, so they scream and writhe and spread their urine upon the floor and beg for forgiveness for ever thinking they could put Victor Au Julii in a gory damn cage.
She smiles fairly.
I want revenge.
Revenge is a hollow end, I say.
And I'm a hollow girl now.
I know she's not. I know she's more than that. But I also know better than anyone that wounds aren't healed in a day. I'm barely stitched together myself, and I have my entire family here. If that is what you want, that is what I owe you. In 3 days, the carver who made me into a gold will be here. He will make us what we were. We'll mend your spine, give you your legs back if you want them. She squints at me.
And you trust me, after what trust has cost you?
I take the magnetic key given to me by the suns outside and press it to the inside of her cuffs. One by one, they unlatch from the bed, freeing her legs, her arms.
You're dumber than you look, she says.
You might not believe in our rebellion, but I saw Tactus change before his future was robbed from him. I've seen Ragnar forget his bonds and reach for what he wants in this world. I've seen Sevro become a man. I've seen myself change. I truly do believe we choose who we want to be in this life. It isn't preordained. You taught me loyalty, more than Mustang, more than Roke. And because of that, I believe in you, Victra, as much as I've ever believed in anyone.
I hold out my hand.
Be my family, and I will never forsake you. I will never lie to you. I will be your brother as long as you live.
Startled by the emotion in my voice, the cold woman stares up at me. Those defenses she erected forgotten now. In another life, we might have been a pair. Might have had that fire I feel for Mustang, for Io. But not in this life. Victor does not soften. Does not crumble to tears. There's still rage inside her. Still raw hate and so much betrayal and frustration and loss coiled around her icy heart. But in this moment, she is free of it all. In this moment, she reaches solemnly up to grasp my hand, and I feel the hope flicker in me.
Welcome to the Sons of Ares.
Part 2. Rage. Shit escalates. Severo Albarca. Chapter 13. Howlers.
It's gory damn frustrating being kept in the dark, Victra mutters as she helps me rack the weights on the bench press.
The sound echoes through the stone gymnasium. It's bare bones in here, metal weights, rubber tires, ropes, and months of my sweat.
Don't they know who you are? I say, sitting up.
Oh, shut up. Didn't you found the Howlers? Don't you have any say over how they treat us?
She nudges me off the bench to take my spot, laying her spine on the padded surface and pushing her arms up to grip the barbell. I take a few weights off, but she glares at me and I put them back on as she fixes her grip.
Technically, no, I say.
Oh, but seriously, what's a girl got to do to get a wolf cloak?
Her powerful arms thrust the bar up off from its rack, moving it up and down as she talks. Nearly 300 kilos.
I shot a legget in the head 2 missions ago. A legget! I've seen your howlers. Aside from Ragnar, they're tiny. They need more heavies if they want to take on Aegis's bone riders of the Sovereign's Praetorians.
She grits her teeth as she finishes her last repetition, racking the bar without my help, and standing to point to herself in the mirror. Hers is a powerful, laconic form, shoulders broad and swaying with a haughty walk.
I'm a perfect physical specimen, on and off my feet, not using me as an indictment on Severa's intelligence.
I roll my eyes.
It's probably your lack of self-confidence he's worried about.
She throws a towel at me. You're as annoying as he is. Swear to Jove, if he says one more thing about my nascent poverty, I'm going to cut his head off with a gory damn spoon.
I watch her for a moment, trying not to laugh.
What, you have something to say as well?
Not a thing, my good lady, I say, holding up my hands. Her eyes linger on them instinctively.
Squats next.
The ramshackle gymnasium has been our second home since Mickey carved us. It was weeks of recovery in his ward, as her nerves remembered how to walk, and both of us tried to put on weight again under the supervision of Dr. Virani. A gaggle of reds and a green watch us from the corner of the gym. Even after 2 months, the novelty hasn't worn off seeing how much 2 chemically and genetically enhanced peerless scarred can lift. Ragnar came in to embarrass us a couple weeks back. Brute didn't even say a word, just started piling weights onto a barbell till no more would fit. Power cleaned it, and then gestured for us to do the same. Victor couldn't even get the weight off the ground. I got as far as my knees. Then we had to listen to the 100 idiots who flocked after him chant his name for an hour. Found out afterward Uncle Nerol had been overseeing bets on how much more Ragnar could lift than I. Even my own uncle bet against me.
But it's a good sign, even if the others don't think of it this way. Gold can't win everything. It was with Mickey and Dr. Virani's help that Victor and I regained control of our bodies. But regaining our sense in the field has taken just as long. We started with baby steps. Our first mission out together was a supply run with Holiday and a dozen bodyguards. Not for the supply run itself, but for me. We didn't do it with the Howlers.
Gotta work your way up to the A squad, Reap. Make sure you can keep up,
Severo said, patting my face.
And Julia has to prove herself.
She slapped his hand when he tried petting her. 10 supply runs, 2 sabotage missions, and 3 assassinations later, Severo was finally convinced that Holiday, Victra, and I were ready to run with the B squad, the Pit Vipers, led by my own Uncle Nerol, who's become a bit of a cult hero to the Reds here. Ragnar's a godlike creature, but my uncle is just a rough old man who drinks too much, smokes too much, and is uncommonly good at war. His Pit Vipers are a motley collection of hardasses specializing in sabotage and thievery. About half are ex-helldivers, the rest are a spattering of other useful low-colors. We've completed 3 missions with them, destroying a barracks and several Legion communications installations. But I can't shake the feeling we're a snake eating our own tail. Every bombing is twisted by the society media. Every pinprick of damage we do seems only to bring more Legions from Aegea to the mines or the smaller cities of Mars. I feel hunted. Worse, I feel like a terrorist. I've only ever felt this way once before, and that was with a bomb on my chest, walking into the gala on Luna. Dancer and Theodora have been pressing Severo to reach out to more allies, trying to bridge the gap between the Suns and other factions. Reluctantly, Severo agreed. So earlier this week, the Pit Vipers and I were dispatched from the tunnels to the northern continent of Arabia Terra, where the Red Legion had carved themselves a stronghold in the port city of Ismenia. It was Dancer's hope I could bring them into the fold, in a way Severo hadn't been able to, maybe pull them away from Harmony's influence. But instead of finding allies, we found a mass grave. A grey, bombed-out city shelled from orbit. I can still see that pale, bloated mass of bodies writhing on the coastline. Crabs skittering over the corpses, making meals of the dead, as a lone ribbon of smoke twirled and twirled up to the stars, the old, soundless echo of war. I'm haunted by the sight, but Victra seems to have moved past it as she ploughs through her workout. She's pushed it to that vast vault in the back of her mind where she compresses and locks away all the evil she's seen, all the pain she's felt. I wish I were more like her. I wish I felt less and was less afraid. But as I recall that ribbon of smoke, all I can think is that it presages something worse. As if the universe is showing us a glimpse of the end we're rushing toward. It's late night, and the mirrors have fogged with condensation when we're done with our workout. We wash up in the showers, talking over the plastic dividers. Take it as a sign of progress, I say. At least she's speaking to you.
No, your mother hates me. She'll always hate me. Not a damn thing I can do about it.
Well, you could try being more polite.
I'm perfectly polite,
Victor says in offence, turning off her shower and exiting the stall. Eyes closed against the water, I finish shampooing my hair, expecting her to say more. She doesn't. So I finish rinsing the shampoo out and exit the stall when I'm done. I feel something's amiss the moment before I see Victra naked on the floor, hands and legs hog-tied behind her back, a hood over her head. Something moves behind me. I whirl around just in time to see a half-dozen ghost cloaks slipping through the steam. Then someone inhumanly strong slams into me from behind, wrapping their arms around mine,
pinning them to my sides. I feel their breath on my neck. Terror screams through me. The jackals found us. He snuck in. How?
Golds! I shout. Golds!
I'm slick from the shower. The floor is slippery. I use it to my advantage, wriggling against my attacker's arms like an eel and lashing back with my head in his face. There's a grunt. I twist again. Feet slip. I fall, smacking my knee on the concrete floor. Scramble to my feet. Feel two attackers rushing me from the left. Cloaked. I duck under one, putting my shoulder into his knees. He catapults over my head and smashes through the plastic barriers that divide the shower behind me. I grab the other by the throat, blocking a punch, and throw him into the ceiling. Another slams into me from the side, prying at my leg with his hands to take my balance. I go with it, jumping in the air, twisting my body in a cravat move that steals his center of gravity and puts us both on the ground, his head between my thighs. All I need do is twist and his neck breaks. But two more sets of hands are on me, thumping me in the face. More are on my legs. Ghost cloaks rippling in the vapor. I'm screaming and thrashing and spitting, but there are too many. And they're nasty, punching the tendons behind my knees so I can't kick, and the nerves in my shoulders so my arms feel heavy as lead. They shove a hood over my head and bind my hands behind my back. I lay there motionless, terrified, panting.
Get them on their knees,
an electronic voice growls.
On their bloody damn knees.
Bloody damn? Ah, shit. As I realize who it is, I let them lift me up to my knees. Hood is removed. The lights are out. Several dozen candles have been set on the shower floor, throwing shadows about the room. Victra's to my left, eyes furious, blood coming from her now crooked nose. Holiday has appeared to my right, fully clothed but similarly bound. She is carried in by two black-clad figures and forced down on her knees. A big grin splits her face. Standing around us in the bathroom steam are 10 demons with black-painted faces staring out from beneath the mouths of the wolf pelts that hang from their heads to their mid-thighs. Two lean against the wall, in pain from my rabid defense. Beneath the pelt of a bear, Ragnar towers beside several. The howlers have come for new recruits, and they look bloody terrifying.
Greetings, you ugly little bastards.
Severo growls, removing the voice synthesizer. He stalks forward through the shadows to stand before us.
It has come to my attention that you are abnormally devious, savage, and generally malicious creatures, gifted in the arts of murder, mayhem, and chaos. If I am mistaken, do say so now.
Severo! You scared the shit out of us, Victra says. The hell is your problem?
Do not profane this moment,
Ragnar says menacingly. Victra spits.
You broke my nose, you oaf!
Technically I did, Severo says. He jerks his head to a lean howler with red sigils on his hands. Sleepy helped.
You little dwarf!
You were squirming, love. Pebble says from somewhere among the howlers. I can't tell which she is. Voice resounding off the walls.
And if you keep talking, we'll just gag you and tickle you.
Clown says, sinisterly.
So, shh.
Victra shakes her head but keeps her mouth shut. I'm trying not to laugh at the solemnity of the moment. Severo continues, pacing back and forth before us.
You have been watched, and now you are wanted. If you accept our invitation to join our brotherhood, you must take an oath to be always faithful to your brothers and sisters, to never lie, never betray those under the cloak. All your sins, all your scars, all your enemies now belong to us, our burden to share. Your loves, Your family will become your second loves, your second family. We are your first. If you cannot abide this, if you cannot conscience this bond, say so now and you may leave. He waits. Not even Victor says a word.
Good. Now, as per the rules set forth in our sacred text...
He holds up a little black book with dog-eared pages and a white howling wolf head on the front.
You must be purged of your former oaths, and prove your worth before you can take our vows.
He holds up his hands.
So let the purge begin.
The howlers pitch back their heads and howl like maniacs. What comes next is a blur of kaleidoscopic oddities. Music thumps from somewhere. We're kept on our knees, hands tied. The howlers rush forward. Bottles are brought to our lips and we chug as they chant around some weird looping melody that Severo leads with bawdy aplomb. Ragnar roars with satisfaction when I finish the bottle they bring me. I almost puke then and there. The liquor burns, scouring my esophagus and belly. Victor's coughing behind me. Holiday just chugs on, and the howlers cheer as she finishes her bottle. We wave her there as they surround Victor, chanting as she gasps and tries to finish the liquor. It splashes over her face. She coughs.
Is that your best daughter of the sun? Ragnar bellows. Drink!
Ragnar roars with delight when she finally finishes the swill, coughing and muttering curses.
Bring forth the snakes and the cockroaches, he shouts.
They chant like priests as Pebble wobbles forward with a bucket. They push us together so we surround the bucket and, in the wavering light, can see the bottom of it wriggling with life. Thick, shiny cockroaches with hairy legs and wings crawl around a pit viper. I reel back, terrified and drunk as our binds are cut. Holiday's already reached inside and grabs the snake. She slams it on the floor till it dies. Victor just stares at the grey.
What the...
Finish your bucket or get the box, Severo says.
What does that even mean?
Finish the bucket or get the box. Finish the bucket or get the box, they chant.
Holiday takes a bite of the dead snake, tearing into it with her teeth.
Yes, Ragnar bellows. She has the soul of a howler. Yes.
I'm so drunk I can barely see. I reach into the bucket, shivering as I feel the cockroaches crawl over my hand. I snatch one up and jam it into my mouth. It's still moving. I force my jaw to chew. I'm almost crying. Victor is gagging at the sight of me. I swallow it down and grab her hand and force it into the bucket. She makes a sudden lurching movement, and I'm too slow to realize what it means. Her vomit splashes onto my shoulder. At the smell of it, I can't hold my own in. Holiday chews on. Ragnar shouts her praises. By the time we finish the bucket, we're a huddled, pathetic mass of drunk, bug and guts-covered filth. Severo saying something in front of us, keeps swaying back and forth. Maybe that's me. Is he talking? Someone shakes my shoulder from behind. Was I asleep?
This is our sacred text, my little friend is saying. You will study this sacred text. Soon you will know this sacred text inside and out. But today, you need know only Howler Rule 1.
Never bow, Ragnar says.
Never bow,
the rest echo, and Clown steps forward with three wolf cloaks. Like the fur of the wolves at the Institute, these pelts modulate to their environment and take on a dark hue in the candlelit room. He holds one out for Victor. They free her bonds and she tries to stand, but can't. Pebble reaches to help her up, but Victor ignores the hand, tries again and tilts down to a knee, Then Severo kneels beside her and extends a hand. Looking at it through sweat-soaked hair, Victra snorts out a laugh as she realizes what this is about. She takes his hand, and only with his help can she walk steadily enough to take her cloak. Severo takes it from Clown and drapes it around her bare shoulders. Their eyes meet and linger for a moment before they move to the side, so Holiday can be helped up by Pebble to gain her cloak. Ragnar helps me, draping mine over my shoulders.
Welcome, brother and sisters, to the Howlers! Together the Howlers pitch back their heads and let loose a mighty howl. I join them and find to my surprise that Victra does as well, hurling her head back in the darkness without reservations. Then suddenly the lights flare on. The howls die as we look around in confusion. Dancer trudges into the showers with Uncle Nerol.
"The bloody hell is this?"
Nerol asks, eyeing the cockroaches and the remains of the snake and the bottles. The howlers look at the ludicrousness of one another awkwardly.
"We're performing a secret occult ritual," Severo says, "and you are interrupting, subordinate."
"Right," Nerol says, nodding, a little disturbed. "Sorry, sir."
"One of our pinks stole a datapad from a bone rider in Aegea," Dancer says to Severo, not amused by the display. "We found out who he is."
"No shit," Severo says. "Was I right?"
"Who?" I ask drunkenly. "Who the hell are you talking about?"
"The Jackal's silent partner," Dancer says. "It's Quicksilver."
"You were right, Severo. Our agents say he's at his corporate headquarters on Phobos. But he won't be for long. He's bound for Luna in 2 days. We won't be able to touch him there."
"So, Operation Black Market is a go," Severo says.
"It's a go," Dancer admits reluctantly. Severo pumps his fist in the air.
"Hell yeah! You heard the man, Howlers. Get scrubbed, get sober, get fed. We've got a silver to kidnap and an economy to crash."
He looks at me with a wild grin on his face. "It's gonna be a hell of a day. A hell of a day."
Chapter 14. The Vampire Moon. Phobos means fear. In myth, he was the offspring of Aphrodite and Ares, the child of love and war. It's a fitting name for the larger of Mars's moons. Formed long before the age of man, when a meteorite struck Father Mars and flung debris into orbit, the oblong moon floated like a cast-off corpse, dead and abandoned for a billion years. Now it is the hive teeming with the parasitic life that pumps blood into the veins of the Gold Empire. Swarms of tiny, fat-bodied cargo ships rise from Mars's surface to funnel into the two huge grey docks that encircle the moon. There, they transfer the bounty of Mars to the kilometre-long cosmos haulers that will bear the treasure along the great Julii-Argos trade routes to the rim, or, more likely, to the core, where hungry Luna waits to be fed. The barren rock of Phobos has been carved hollow by man and wreathed with metal. With a radius of only 12 kilometres at its widest, the moon is ringed by two huge dockyards which run perpendicular to each other. There, dark metal and white glyphs and blinking red lights for docking ships. They slither with the movement of magnetic trams and cargo vessels. Beneath the dockyards, and at times rising around them in the form of spiked towers, is the Hive. A jigsaw city, formed not by neoclassical gold ideals, but by raw economics, without the confines of gravity. 6 centuries worth of buildings perforate Phobos. It is the largest pincushion man has ever built. And the disparity of wealth between the inhabitants of the Needles, the tips of the buildings, and the hollow inside the moon's rock, borders on hilarious.
looks larger when you're not on the bridge of a torch ship,
Victra drawls from behind me.
Being disenfranchised is so damn tedious.
I feel her pain. The last time I saw Phobos was before the lion's reign. Then I had an armada at my back, Mustang and the Jackal at my side, and thousands of peerless Skard at my command. Enough firepower to make a planet tremble. Now I'm skulking in the shadows, in a rickety cargo hauler so old it doesn't even have an artificial gravity generator, accompanied only by Victra, a crew of three suns, gas haulers, and a small team of howlers in the cargo bay. And this time I'm taking orders, not giving them. My tongue plays over the suicide tooth they put in my back right molar after the howler initiation. All the howlers have them now. Better than being taken alive, Severo said. I have to agree with him. Still, feels strange. In the aftermath of my escape, the Jackal initiated an immediate moratorium on all flights leaving Mars for orbit. He suspected the suns would make a desperate bid to get me off planet. Fortunately, Severo isn't a fool. If he had been, I'd likely be in the Jackal's hands. Ultimately, not even the arch-governor of Mars could ground all commerce for long, and so his moratorium was short-lived. But the shock waves it sent through the market were staggering. Billions of credits lost every minute the Helium-3 did not flow. Severo found it rather inspiring. How much of it does Quicksilver own? I ask. Victra pulls herself beside me in the null gravity. Her jagged hair floats around her head like a white crown. It's been bleached and her eyes have been blackened with contacts. Easier for obsidians to move about the rougher ends of the moon than it would be without the disguise, and being one of the largest howlers, she hardly could pass for any other color. Hard to guess, she says. Silver ownership is a tricky thing, in the end. The man has so many dummy corporations and off-grid bank accounts, I doubt even the Sovereign knows how large his portfolio is. Or who is in it? If the rumor of him owning goals is true. They are. Victor shrugs, which tips her backward. He's got his fingers everywhere. One of the only men too rich to kill, according to Mother. Is he richer than she was? Than you are. Were, she corrects, shakes her head. He knew better than that. There's a pause. But maybe. My eyes seek the silver winged heel icon that is stamped on the greatest of Phobos's towers, a 3-kilometer-long double helix of steel and glass tipped with a silver crescent. How many gold eyes look on it with jealousy? How many more must he own or bribe to protect him from all the rest? Perhaps just one. Crucial to the Jackal's rise was his silent partner, a man who helped him secretly gain control of the media and telecommunications industries. For the longest time, I thought that partner was Victra, or her mother, and he closed the loop in the garden. But it seems the Jackal's greatest ally is alive and prospering. For now. 30 million people, I whisper. Incredible. I can feel her eyes on me. You don't agree with Severo's plan, do you? My thumb picks at a wad of pink gum stuck to the rusted bulkhead. Kidnapping Quicksilver will get us intel and access to vast weapons factories, but Severo's play against the economy is more concerning. Severo kept the suns alive. I didn't, so I'll follow his lead. She eyes me skeptically. I wonder when you started believing grit and vision were the same thing.
Oi, shitheads! Severo squawks over the comm unit in my ear. If you're done sightseeing or humping or whatever the hell you're doing, it's time to tuck in.
Half an hour later, Victor and I huddled together with the howlers in one of the helium-3 containers stacked in the back of our transport. We can feel the ship reverberate beyond the container as it links its magnetic coupling to the dock's ringed surface. Beyond the ship's hull, oranges will be floating in mechanized suits, waiting to steer the weightless cargo containers onto magnetic trams that will, in turn, take them to the cosmos haulers, awaiting the journey to Jupiter. There, they will resupply Roke's fleet in his war effort against Mustang and the Moon Lords. But before the containers are transported, Copper and Grey inspectors will come to examine them. They'll be bribed by our blues into counting 49 containers instead of 50. Then an orange, bribed by our contact, will lose the container we're in. A common practice for the smuggling of illegal drugs or untaxed goods. He'll deposit it in a lower-level berth for machine parts, whereupon our son's contact will meet us and escort us to our safe house. At least that's the plan. But for now, we wait. Eventually gravity returns, signaling we're in the hangar. Our container settles on the floor with a thud. We steady ourselves against helium-3 drums. Voices drift beyond the metal walls of the container. The hauler beeps as it decouples from us and returns out the pulse field to space. Then silence. I don't like it. My hand twists around the leather grip of my razor inside my jacket sleeve. I take a step forward toward the door. Victor follows. Severo grabs my shoulder. We wait for the contact. We don't even know the man, I say. Dancer vouched for him. He snaps his fingers at me to return to my place. We wait. I notice the others listening, so I nod and shut my mouth. It's 10 minutes later that we hear a solitary pair of feet click against the deck outside. The lock thuds back on the container doors. The dim light seeps in as they part to reveal a clean-cut, goateed red with a toothpick in his mouth. Half a head shorter than Severo, he clicks his eyes over each of us in turn, one eyebrow climbing upward when he sees Ragnar. The other follows when he looks down the muzzle of Severo's scorcher. Somehow, he doesn't step back. Man's got a spine in him. What can never die? Severo growls in his best obsidian accent. The fungus under Ares' sack. The man smiles and glances over his shoulder. Mine's lowering the nasty. We gotta move now. Borrowed this dock from the syndicate. Except they don't really know about it, so unless you want to tangle with some professional uglies, we gotta box the jabber and waddle on. He claps his hands. Now means now. Our contact goes by the name of Rolo. Stringy and wry, with sparkling bright eyes, and an easy way with the women, even though he brings up his wife, the most beautiful woman who has apparently ever walked the surface of Mars, at least twice a minute. He also hasn't seen her in 8 years. He spent that time on the Hive, as a welder on the space towers. Not technically a slave like the Reds in the mines, he and his are contract labor. Wage slaves who work 14-hour days, 6 days a week, suspended between the megalithic towers that puncture the Hive, welding metal and praying they never suffer a workplace injury. Get an injury? You can't earn. Can't earn? You don't eat. Mighty full of himself, I overhear Severo saying under his breath to Victra in the middle of the pack as Rolo leads on. I rather like his goatee, Victor says. The Blues call this place the Hive, Rolo's saying, as we head toward a graffiti-smeared tram in a derelict maintenance level. Smells like grease, rust, and old piss. Homeless vagrants festoon the floors of the shadowy metal halls. Twitching bundles of blankets and rags that Rolo sidesteps without looking, though his hand never leaves the worn plastic hilt of his scorcher.
Might be to them. They got schools, homes here. Little airhead communes, sects, to be technic, where they learn to fly and sync up with the computers. But let me learn you what this place really is. Just a grinder. Men come in, towers go up. He nods his head at the ground. Meat goes out. The only signs of life from the vagrants on the floor are little gouts of breath that plume up from their lumpy rags, like steam from the cracks in a lava field. I shiver beneath my grey jacket and adjust the bag of gear over my shoulder. It's freezing on this level. Old insulation, probably. Pebble blows a cloud of steam through our nostrils as she pushes one of our gear carts, looking sadly left and right at the vagrants. Less empathetic, Victra guides the cart from the front, nudging a vagrant out of the way with her boot. The man hisses and looks up at her, and up, till he sees all 2.1 meters of annoyed killer. He skitters to the side, breathing through his teeth. Neither Ragnar nor Rollo seem to notice the cold. Sons of Ares wait for us on the run-down tram platform and inside the tram itself. Most are red, but there's a good amount of oranges and a green and blue in the mix. They cradle a motley collection of old scorchers and strafe the other hallways that lead to the platform with edgy eyes that can't help but jump our direction and wonder just who the hell we are. I'm thankful more than ever for the obsidian contacts and prosthetics. Expecting trouble? Severo asks, eyeing the weapons in the son's hands. Grey's been sweeping down here last couple months. Not hollow-ass tinpots from the local precinct, but naughty bastards. Legionnaires. Even some 13th mixed in with 10th and 5th. He lowers his voice. We had a nasty month, where they shred us up real bloody damn bad. Took our headquarters in the Hollows. Stuck syndicate toughs on us too. Paid to hunt their own. Most of us had to go to ground, hiding in secondary safe houses. Main body of sons have been helping the Red Rebels on the station, obviously, but our special ops hasn't flexed muscle till today. We didn't want to take chances, you know? Ares said you lot got important business. Ares is wise, Severo says dismissively. And a drama queen, Victra adds. At the door to the tram, Ragnar hesitates, eyes lingering on an anti-terrorism poster pasted onto a concrete support column in the tram's waiting area. See something, say something, it reads, showing a pale red with evil crimson eyes and the stereotypical tattered dress of a miner skulking near a door that says, Restricted Access. Can't see the rest. It's covered in rebel graffiti. But then I realise Ragnar's not looking at the poster, but at a man I didn't even notice, who's crumpled on the ground beneath it. His hood's up. Left leg is an ancient mech replacement. A crusted brown bandage covers half his face. There's a puff, the release of pressurized gas, and the man leans back from us, shivering and smiling with perfectly black teeth. A plastic stim cartridge clatters to the floor. Tar dust. Why do you not help these people? Ragnar asks.
Help them with what?
Rollo asks. He sees the empathy on Ragnar's face and doesn't really know how to answer.
Brother, we barely got enough for flesh and kin. No good sharing with that lot, you know?
But that one is red. They are your family.
Rollo frowns at the bare truth.
Save the pity, Ragnar, Victor says. That syndicate cranky's puffing. Most of them would slit your throat for an afternoon high. They're empty flesh.
Empty? What? I say, turning back to her. She's caught off guard by the sharpness of my tone, but she's loath to back off, so she doubles down instinctively.
Empty flesh, darling, she repeats. Part of being human is having dignity. They don't. They carved it out themselves. That was their choice, not Gold's. Even if it's easy to blame them for everything. So why should they deserve my pity?
Because not everyone is you, or had your birth. She doesn't reply.
Rollo clears his throat, skeptical now about our disguises.
Ladies right about the slit your throat part. Most of them were imported labourers, like me. Not counting the wife, I've got plus three in New Thebes that I send money back to, but I can't go home till my contract's up. Got 4 years left. These slags have given up on trying to get back.
4 years? Victra asks, dubiously. You said you were already here 8.
Gotta pay for my transit.
She stares at him quizzically.
Company doesn't cover it. Should have read the fine print. Sure, it was my choice to come here. He nods to the vagrants. Was theirs too. But when the only other choice is starving? He shrugs, as if we all know the answer. These slags just got unlucky on the job. Lost legs, arms. Company doesn't cover prosthetics, at least not decent ones. What about carvers? I ask. He scoffs. And who the hell do you know that can afford flesh work?
I didn't even think of the cost. Reminds me of how distant I am from so many of the people I claim to fight for. Here's a red, one of my own, more or less, and I don't even know what type of food is popular in his culture.
What company do you work for? Victra asks.
Why, Julii Industries, of course.
I watch the metal jungle pass outside the dirty duraglass window as the tram pulls away from the station. Victra sits down next to me, a troubled look on her face. But I'm a world away from her, my friends, lost in memory. I've been to the Hive before with Arch-Governor Augustus and Mustang. They brought the Lancers to meet with Society Economic Ministers to discuss modernizing the moon's infrastructure. After the meetings, she and I snuck away to the moon's famous aquarium. I'd rented it out at absurd cost and arranged a meal and wine to be served to us in front of the orca tank. Mustang always liked natural creatures more than carved ones. I've traded 50-year-old wines and pink valets for a grimmer world with rusting bones and rebel thugs. This is the real world. Not the dream the Golds live in. Today I feel the silent screams of a civilization that has been stepped on for hundreds of years. Our path skirts around the edges of the hollows, the center of the moon where the latticework of cage slum apartments festers without gravity. To go there would risk falling into the middle of the Syndicate street war against the Sons of Ares, and to go any higher into the mid-color levels would be to risk Society Marines and their security infrastructure of cameras and holoscanners. Instead, we pass through the hinterlands of maintenance levels between the hollows and the needles, where reds and oranges keep the moon running. Our tram, driven by a sun's sympathizer, speeds through its stops. The faces of waiting workers blur together as we pass. A pastiche of eyes, but faces all grey. Not the colour of metal, but the colour of old ash in a campfire. Ash faces, ash clothes, ash lives. But as the tunnel swallows our tram, colour erupts around us. Graffiti and years of rage bleeding out from the ribbed and cracking walls of its once grey throat. Profanity in 15 dialects. Golds ripped open in a dozen dark ways. And to the right of a crude sketch of a reaper's scythe decapitating Octavia Auloon is an image of Io hanging from the gallows in digital paint. Hair aflame. Break the chains written diagonally.
It's a single glowing flower among the weeds of hate. A knot forms in my throat. Half an hour after we set out, our tram grinds to a halt outside a deserted low-color industrial hub, where thousands of workers should diverge from their early morning commutes from the stacks to attend their functions. But now it's still as a cemetery. Trash litters the metal floors. Hollow cans still flash with the society's news programs. A cup sits on a table in a cafe, steam still rising off the top of the beverage. The sons have cleared the way only a few minutes before. Shows the extent of their influence here. When we leave, life will return to the place. But after we plant the bombs we've brought with us, after we destroy the manufacturing, won't all the men and women we intend to help be just as unemployed as those poor creatures in the tram station? If work is their reason for being, what happens when we take it away? I'd voice my concerns to Severo, but he's a driven arrow, as dogmatic as I once was. And to question him aloud seems a betrayal of our friendship. He's always trusted me blindly. So, am I the worse friend for having doubts in him? We pass through several grav lifts into a garage for garbage disposal haulers, also owned by Julii Industries. I catch Victra wiping dirt off the family crest on one of the doors. The speared sun is worn and faded. The few dozen red and orange workers of the facility pretend not to notice our group as we file into one of the hauler bays. Inside, at the base of two huge haulers, we find a small army of Sons of Ares. More than 600. They're not soldiers, not like us. Most are men, but there's a scattering of women, mostly younger reds and oranges, forced to migrate here for work to feed Mars' side families. Their weapons are shoddy. Some stand, others are seated, turning from conversations to see our pack of obsidian killers stalking across the metal deck, carrying bags of gear and pushing two mysterious carts. A small sadness grows in me. Whatever they do, wherever they go, their lives will be stained by this day. If it were my duty to address them, I'd warn them the burden they're taking on, the evil they'll be letting into their lives. I'd say it's nicer to hear about glorious victories in war than to witness them, than to feel the weird unreality of lying in bed every morning, knowing you've killed a man, knowing a friend is gone. But I say nothing. My place now is beside Ragnar and Victra, behind Severo, as he spits out his gum and stalks forward, giving me a wink and an elbow in the side, to stand in front of the small army. His army. He's tiny for an obsidian male, but still scarred and tattooed and terrifying to this company of small-handed garbage men and hunched tower welders. He tilts his head forward, eyes smouldering behind his black contacts. Wolf tattoos looking evil against his pale skin in the industrial light. Greetings, grease monkeys. His voice rumbles, low and predatory. You might be wondering why Ares has sent a pack of hardcore nasties like us to this tin shithole. The sons look to one another nervously. We aren't here to cuddle. We aren't here to inspire you or give long-ass speeches like the bloody damn sovereign. He snaps his fingers. Pebble and Clown wheel the carts forward and unlatch the tops. The hinges squeal open to reveal mining explosives. We're here to blow shit up. He throws open his arms and cackles. Any questions? Chapter 15. The Hunt. I float in the back of the trash collector with the howlers. It's dark. The night vision of my optics shows the garbage that orbits us in shadowy green. banana peels, toy packaging, coffee grounds. Victra makes a gagging sound over the comm as toilet paper sticks to her face. Her mask is a demon helm. Like mine, it's pupil black and shaped subtly like a screaming demon face. Fitchner managed to steal them from Luna's armory for the Suns more than a year back. With them, we can see most spectrums, amplify sound, track one another's coordinates, access maps, and communicate silently. My friends around me are in all black. We wear no mechanized armor, only thin scarab skin over our bodies that will stop knives and occasional projectiles. We have no grav boots or pulse armor, nothing that will slow us, cause noise, or trip sensors. We wear oxygen tanks with air enough for 40 minutes. I finish adjusting Ragnar's harness and look to my datapad. The two Reds crewing the old trash collector are giving us a countdown. When it reaches one, Severo says, "Tuck your sacks and pop your cloaks." I activate my ghost cloak, and the world warps, distorted by the cloak. It's like looking through refracted, dirty water. And I already feel the battery pack heating up against my tailbone. The cloak's good for short bursts, but it burns up small batteries like the ones we pack, and needs time to cool and recharge. I grope for Severo and Victor's hands, managing to grasp them in time. The rest partner up as well. I don't remember feeling so frightened before the Iron Rain. Was I braver then? Maybe just more naive. "Hold tight. We're in for some chop," Severo says. "Popping top in 3, 2... I tighten my grip on his hand. 1. The collector's door retracts silently, bathing us in the amber light of a holodisplay screen on a nearby skyscraper. There's a burst of air, and my world spins as the trash collector ejects its load of garbage from the back of its hold. We're like seed chaff, thrown into the city, spinning with debris through a kaleidoscope world of towers and advertisements. Hundreds of ships funneling along avenues, all a flashing liquid blur. We continue to spin head over heel to mask our signatures. Over the comm, I hear the grazzing of a blue traffic controller, annoyed at the spilled trash. Soon, there's a company copper on the line threatening to fire the incompetent drivers. But it's what I don't hear that makes me smile. The police channels drone on their usual slant, reporting a syndicate airjacking in the Hive, a grisly murder in the ancient art museum near the Park Plaza, a data center robbery in the banking cluster. They haven't seen us amidst the debris. We slow our spin gradually, using small thrusters in our helmets. Bursts of air bring us to a steady drift. Silent in the vacuum. We're on target. Along with the rest of the trash, we're about to impact on the side of a steel tower. Has to be a clean landing. Victor curses as we drift closer, closer. My fingers tremble. Don't bounce. Don't bounce. "Release!" Severo orders. I pull my hands from his and Victor's, and the three of us impact jarringly against the steel. The trash around us bounds off the metal, cartwheeling backward at odd angles. Severo and Victor stick, complements of the magnets in their gloves, but a piece of debris impacting in front of me bounces off the steel and hits me in the thigh, altering my trajectory, tipping me sideways, hands windmilling for a grip which causes me to spin. My feet hit first and I bounce backward towards space, cursing. "Severo!" I shout. "Victor, get him!" A hand grabs my foot, jerking me to a halt. I look down and see a warped, invisible form grasping my leg. Victor. Carefully, she pulls my weightless body back to the wall so I can clamp my own magnets onto the steel. Spots race across my vision. The city is all around us. It's dreadful in its silence, in its colors, in its inhuman metal landscape. It feels more like an ancient alien artifact than a place for humans. "Slow it down,"
Victor's voice crackles in my helmet. Darrow, you're hyperventilating. Breathe with me. In. Out. In. I force my lungs to breathe and sink with her. The spots soon fade. I open my eyes, face inches from the steel.
You shit your suit or something?
Severo asks. I'm good, I say. A little rusty.
Ugh.
Pun intended, I'm sure. Ragnar and the rest of the howlers land 30 meters beneath us on the wall. Pebble waves up to me.
Got 300 meters to go. Let's climb, you pixies.
Lights glow behind the glass of Quicksilver's double helix towers. Connecting the double helixes are nearly 200 levels of offices. I can make out shapes moving inside at computer terminals. I zoom in with my optics to watch the stock traders sitting in their offices, their assistants moving to and fro, analysts signaling furiously on holographic trading boards that communicate with the markets on Luna. Silvers all. They remind me of industrious bees.
Makes me miss the boys, Victra says.
Takes me a moment to realize she's not talking about the Silvers. The last time she and I tried this tactic, Tactus and Roke were with us. We infiltrated Carnus's flagship from Vacuum as he refueled at an asteroid base during the Academy's mock war. We cut through his hull with aims of kidnapping him to eliminate his team. But it was a trap, and I narrowly escaped with the help of my friends. A broken arm, my only reward for the gambit. It takes us 5 minutes to climb from our landing place to the peak of the tower, where it becomes a large crescent. We don't go hand over hand, so climbing isn't the true term. The magnets in our gloves have fluctuating positive and negative currents that allow us to roll up the side of the tower like we have wheels in our palms. The toughest part of the ascent, or descent, or whatever you'd call it in the null grav, is the crescent slope at the extreme height or end of the tower. We have to cling to a narrow metal support beam that extends out among a ceiling of glass, much like the stem of a leaf. Beneath our bellies and through the glass lies Quicksilver's famous museum. And above us, just over the peak of Quicksilver's tower, hangs Mars. My planet seems larger than space, larger than anything ever could be. A world of billions of souls, of designer oceans, mountains, and more irrigable acres of dry land than Earth ever had. It's night on this side of the world, and you could never know that millions of kilometers of tunnels wind through the bones of the planet, that even as its surface glows with the lights of the thousand cities of Mars, there is a pulse unseen, a tide that is rising. But now it looks peaceful. War, a distant, impossible thing. I wonder what a poet would say in this moment. What Roke would whisper into the air. Something about the calm before the storm, or a heartbeat among the deep. But then there's a flash. It startles me. A spasm of light that flares white, then erodes into devilish neon as a mushroom grows in the planet's blackness. Do you see that? I ask over the comms, blinking away the cigar burn the distant detonation made in my vision. Our comms crackle with curses as the others turn to see. Shit, several murmurs. New Thebes? No, Pebble answers. Farther north, that's the Aventine Peninsula. So it's probably Cyprian. Last intel said the Red Legion was moving toward the city. Then comes another flash, and the seven of us hunker motionless on the crest of the building, watching as a second nuclear bomb detonates a thumb's distance away from the first.
Bloody damn! Is it us or them? I ask. Severo? I don't know,
Severo says impatiently.
You don't know?
Victra asks. How could he not know? I want to shout, but I grasp the answer because Dancer's words now haunt me. Severo's not running this war.
he told me, weeks ago after another failed Howler mission. He's just a man pouring gas on the fire. Maybe I didn't understand how far gone this war is, how far-reaching the chaos has become. Could I have been wrong to trust him so blindly? I watch his expressionless mask. The skin of his armor drinks in the colors of the city around, reflecting nothing. An abyss for light. He turns slowly from the explosion and begins to climb again, already moving on.
Hollow news has it, Pebble says. Fast. They say Red Legion used nukes against gold forces near Cyprian. At least that's the story.
Bloody damn liars, Clown snaps. Another bait and switch.
Where would Red Legion get nukes?
Victra asks.
Harmony would use them, if she had any. But I wager it was gold using the bombs on Red Legion instead.
Doesn't mean shit to us now. Lock it up, Severo says. Still got to do what we came to do. Get your asses in gear.
Numbly, we obey. When we reach our entry zone on the crescent of the double helix tower, rehearsed routine takes over. I pull a small acid flask from the pack on Victor's back. Severo releases a nanocam, no larger than my fingernail, into the air, where it hovers above the glass, scanning for life inside the museum.
There is none.
Not a surprise at 0300. He pulls out a pulse generator and waits for Pebble to finish her work on the datapad.
What's what, Pebble? He asks impatiently.
Code's worked. I'm in the system, she says. Just have to find the right zone. There it is. Laser grid is... down. Thermal cams are... frozen. Heartbeat sensors are... off. Congratulations, everyone. We're officially ghosts. So long as no one manually pulls an alarm.
Severo activates the pulse generator, and a faint iridescent bubble blooms around us, creating a seal, so that the vacuum of space doesn't invade the building with us.
Would be a quick way to be discovered.
I put a small suction cup on the center of the glass, then open the acid container and apply the foam to the window in a 2-meter by 2-meter box around the suction cup. The acid bubbles as it eats through the glass, creating an opening. With a small rush of air from the building into our pulse field, the glass pane pops up where Victor grabs it to keep it from flying into space.
Rags first, Severo says.
It's 100 meters to the museum floor below. Ragnar clamps a repelling winch to the edge of the glass and clips his harness to the magnetic wire. Pulling his razor out, he reactivates his ghost cloak and pushes through the hole. It's disturbing to the senses, seeing his near-invisible form accelerate down to the floor, gripped by the skyhook's artificial gravity, while I'm still floating. He looks a demon made of the heat that shimmers above the desert on a summer day.
Clear!
Severo follows.
Break an arm, Victor says, pushing me into the hole after him.
I float forward, then feel myself gripped by gravity as I cross the boundary into the room. I slide down the wire, picking up speed. My stomach lurches at the sudden influx of weight, food sloshing around. I land hard on the ground, almost twisting my ankle as I pull up my silenced scorcher and search for contacts. The rest of the Howlers stand behind me. We crouch back to back in the grand hall. The floor is grey marble. The length of the hall is impossible to gauge because it curves according to the crescent, bowing upward and out of sight, playing with gravity and giving me a sense of vertigo. Metal relics tower around us, old rockets from man's pioneer age. The coat of arms of the Lunar Company marks the hull of a grey probe near Ragnar. It looks decidedly like Octavia Auloon's house crest.
So this is what it's like to feel fat, Severo says with a grunt, as he takes a small jump in the heavy gravity. Disgusting.
Quicksilver's from Earth, Victor says. jacks it up even higher when he's negotiating with anyone from low-grav birthplaces.
It's 3 times what I'm used to on Mars, 8 times what they prefer on Io or Europa. But in rebuilding my body, Mickey jacked the simulators up to 2x Earth's gravity. It's an unpleasant sensation, weighing nearly 800 pounds, but it works the muscle something horrible. We strip our oxygen tanks and stow them in the engine room of an old space shuttle painted with the flag of pre-Empire America. So we're left with our small packs, scarab skin, demon helms, and weapons. Severo pulls up Victra's crude maps of the tower's interior and asks Pebble if she's found Quicksilver yet.
I can't. It's odd. The cameras are off in the top 2 levels. Same with biometric readers. Can't pinpoint him like we planned.
Off? I ask. Maybe he's having an orgy, or wanking off and doesn't want his security to see.
Severo grunts with a shrug.
Either way, he's hiding something, so that's where we're headed.
I cue Severo's personal line so the others can't hear us.
We can't wander around looking for him. If we're caught in the halls without leverage,
we won't wander.
He cuts me off before addressing the howlers.
Cloaks on, ladies. Razors and silenced scorchers. Pulse fists only if shit gets dirty.
He ripples transparent.
Howlers on me.
We slink from the museum into a maze of otherworldly hallways, following Severo's lead. Floors of black marble, walls of glass, 10-meter-high ceilings made from pulse fields, which look into aquariums where vibrant reefs of coral stretch like fungal tentacles. Reptilian mermaids, 1 foot long with humanoid faces, grey skin, and skulls shaped like crowns, swim through a kingdom of scalding blue and violent orange. Hateful little crow eyes glare down at us as they pass. The walls are mood glass and pulse with subtle alternating colours. Now heartbeats of magenta, soon rippling currents of cobalt silver. It's dreamlike. Amidst the maze are little alcoves, miniature art galleries showcasing works of contemporary dot holographs and 21st century AD ostentatiousism, instead of the reserved neoclassical Romanism so in vogue with Peerless Scard. Recharging our battery packs to our ghost cloaks, we duck into a gallery where lurks a gaudy purple metallic dog shaped like a balloon animal. Victra sighs.
Gory hell! Man's got the taste of a tabloid socialite.
Ragnar cocks his head at the dog.
What is it?
Art, Victra says. Supposedly.
The tone of condescension Victra strikes intrigues me, as does the building. It pulses with artifice. The art, the walls, the mermaids, all so on the nose of what the Peerless Scard would expect of a newly moneyed silver. Quicksilver must know gold psychology intimately in order to have been allowed to grow so wealthy. So I wonder, is this extravagance all something far more clever? A mask, so obvious and easy to accept that no one would ever think to look beneath it. Quicksilver, for all his reputation, has never been called stupid. So perhaps this tawdry dreamscape isn't for him. It's for his guests. Which makes me think something here is amiss, as we reach an unlit atrium with unpolished sandstone floors, perforated by pink jasmine trees, and slink across the floor in a V formation toward the set of double doors that leads to Quicksilver's bedroom suite. Cloaks deactivated so we can see better. Razors rigid and held out, metal drifting centimeters above the sandstone. This isn't a home. It's a stage, made to manipulate, sinister in the cold calculation with which it was constructed. I don't like it. I key Severo's frequency again.
Something's wrong here. Where are the servants? The guards?
Maybe he likes his privacy.
I think it's a trap.
A trap? Your head or your gut talking?
My gut.
He's quiet for a breath, and I wonder if he's speaking to someone else on the other line. Maybe he's speaking to all of them.
What's your wreck?
Pull back. Assess the situation to see.
Pull back!
He snaps the question out.
For all we know, they've just dropped nukes on our people. We need this.
I try to interrupt, but he steamrolls me.
Shit, I've run 13 ops just to get intel on this silvery asshole. We leave now, that's all slagged. They'll know we were here. We won't have this chance again. Here's the key to getting the jackal. You gotta trust me, Reap. Do you?
I bite back a curse and cut the signal short. Not sure if I'm angry with him or with myself, or because I know the jackal removed the spark that made me feel different. Every opinion I have, feeble and malleable to others, because I know, deep down, beneath the intimidating scarab skin, beneath the demon mask, is a callow little boy who cried because he was scared of being alone in the dark. Purple light suddenly floods the room as a luxury vessel cruises past the wall of windows at our backs. We hastily line up to either side of the door to Quicksilver's suite, preparing to breach. I watch the vessel drift along through my black optics. Lights pulse on one of its decks as several hundred pixies writhe to some Etrurian club beat that's all the rage on far-off Luna, as if a war didn't wage on the planet beneath this moon. As if we didn't move to rupture their way of life. They'll drink champagne from Earth in clothes made on Venus, in ships fueled by Mars, and they'll laugh and consume and screw and face no consequences. So many little locusts. I feel Severo's righteous wrath burn in me.
Suffering isn't real to them. War isn't real. It's just a three-letter word for other people that they see in the digital news feeds. Just a stream of uncomfortable images they skip past. A whole business of weapons and arms and ships and hierarchies they don't even notice. All to shield these fools from the true agony of what it means to be human. Soon, they'll know. And on their deathbeds they'll remember tonight. Who they were with, what they were doing when that three-letter word gripped them and never let go. This pleasure cruise, this hideous decadence is the last gasp of the Golden Age. And what a pathetic gasp it is.
Of course I trust you, I say, tightening my grip on my razor. Ragnar's watching us, even though he can't hear our signal. Victor is waiting to breach the door.
The light fades, and the ship disappears into the cityscape. I'm surprised to realize I don't feel satisfaction in knowing what's about to happen, in knowing their age will fall. Neither does it bring joy to think of all the lights in all the cities across this empire of man dimming, or all the ships slowing, or all the brilliant golds fading as their buildings rust and crumble. Would that I could hear Mustang's take on this plan. Before, I've missed her lips, her scent. But now I miss the comfort that comes knowing her mind is aligned with mine. When I was with her, I did not feel so alone. She'd probably chastise us for focusing on breaking rather than building. Why do I feel this way now? I'm surrounded by friends, striking at gold as I have always wished. Yet something itches in the back of my brain, like eyes watching me. Whatever Severo says, something is wrong here. Not just in this building, but with his plan. Is this how I would have done it? How Fitchner would have done it? If it succeeds, what do we usher in after the dust has settled and the helium no longer flows? A dark age? Severo is a force unto himself. His rage a thing to move mountains. I was once like that. And look what that got me.
Kill his guards. Stun the Pinks. Smash, grab, and go.
Severo is saying to his howlers. My hand tightens on my blade. He gives the signal, and Ragnar and Victra slip through the doors. The rest of us follow. Into the dark. Chapter 16. Paramore. The lights are off. It's tomb silent. The front room empty. An electric green jellyfish floats in a tank on a table, casting weird shadows. We move through to the bedroom, smashing through the gold filigreed doors. I guard the door with Pebble, crouching on a knee, silenced railgun cradled in my hands, sheathing my razor on my arm. Behind us, a man sleeps in a four-poster bed. Ragnar grabs him by the foot and jerks him out. Clad in expensive sleepwear, he sprawls onto the floor, waking mid-air and screaming silently into Ragnar's hand.
Shit, it's not him, Victor says behind me. It's a Pink.
I glance back. Ragnar kneels over the Pink, blocking him from my view. Severo hits the bedpost, cracking it.
It's 3 in the morning. Where the hell is he?
It is 4 p.m. market time on Luna, Victor says. Maybe he's in his office.
Ask the slave. Where is your master?
Severo's mask makes his voice warble like a steel cable struck by an iron rod. I keep my eyes trained on the living room until the Pink's whimper makes me look back. Severo's got his knee in the man's groin.
Pretty pajamas, boyo. Want to see what they look like in red?
I flinch at the coldness in his voice, knowing the tone all too well, hearing it from the jackal as he tortured me in Attica.
Where is your master?
Severo twists his knee. The Pink wails in pain but still refuses to answer. The howlers watch the torture in silence, bent, faceless stains in the dark room. There's no discussion, no moral question at play. I know they've done this before. I feel dirty in the realization, in hearing the Pink sobbing on the ground. This is more a part of war than trumpets or starships. Quiet, unremembered moments of cruelty.
I don't know, he says. I don't know.
The voice. I remember that voice from my past. I rush from my post at the door and join Severo, pulling him off the Pink, because I know the man and his gentle features. His long angular nose, rose quartz eyes, and dark honey skin. He's as responsible for making me what I am as Mickey ever was. It's Matteo, beautiful and fragile, now gasping on the ground, arm broken, bleeding from his mouth, holding his groin where Severo beat him.
The hell's your damage?
Severo snarls at me.
I know him, I say. What?
Taking advantage of my distraction and seeing nothing but the black demon visages of our helms, Matteo lunges for a datapad sitting on the bedstand. Severo's faster. With a meaty thud, the hardest bone density in the species of man meets the softest. Severo's fist shatters Matteo's fragile jaw. He gags and falls convulsing to the floor, eyes rolling back into his head. I watch in a haze, the violence seeming unreal and yet so cold and primitive and easy. Just muscle and bone, moving the way it shouldn't. I find myself reaching for Matteo, falling over his twitching body, shoving Severo back.
Don't touch him!
Matteo's been knocked unconscious, mercifully. I can't tell if he has spinal damage or brain trauma. I touch the gentle curls of his now dusky hair. It has a blue sheen to it. His hands clutched tight like a child's, a slender silver band on his ring finger. Where has he been this whole time? Why is he here?
I know him, I whisper.
Ragnar's bending beside him protectively, though there's nothing we can do here for Matteo.
clown tosses the datapad to Severo. Panic switch.
What do you mean you know him? Severo asks.
He's a son of Ares, I say in a daze. Or he was. He was one of my teachers before the Institute. He taught me Orient culture.
Gory hell,
Screwface mutters. Victra toes his wrist where little flowers embellish his pink sigils.
He's a rose of the garden, like Theodora.
She glances to Ragnar. He cost as much as you, Stained.
You're sure it's the same man?
Severo asks me.
Of course I'm bloody damn sure. His name is Mateo.
Then why is he here?
Ragnar asks.
Doesn't look like a captive, Victor says. Those are expensive pajamas. He's probably a paramour. Quicksilver's not known for celibacy after all.
He must have turned, Severo says harshly.
Or he was on assignment for your father, I say.
Then why didn't he contact us?
He's defected. Means Quicksilver has infiltrated the Suns. Severo spins to look at the door.
Shit! He could know about Tinos. He could know about this bloody damn raid!
My mind races. Did Ares send Mateo here? Or did Mateo leave a sinking ship? Maybe Mateo told them about me before Harmony did. It's a knife in the gut thinking that. I didn't know him long, but I cared for him. He was a kind person. And there's so few of those left. Now look what we've done to him.
We should get the hell out of here, Clown is saying. Not without Quicksilver,
Severo replies.
We don't know where Quicksilver is, I say. There's more to this. We have to wait for Mateo to wake up. Someone have a stim shot.
Dose would kill him, Victor says. Pink circulatory system can't handle military crank.
We don't have time for talking, Severo barks. Can't risk being pinned in here. We move now.
I try to speak, but he rolls on, looking to Clown, who is using Mateo's datapad.
Clown, what you got?
I've got a food request on the internal server's kitchen subsection. Looks like someone has ordered a whole host of mutton and jam sandwiches and coffee to room C-19.
Reaper, what do you think?
Ragnar asks.
It could be a trap, I say. We need to adjust.
Victra laughs scornfully, cutting me off.
Even if it is a trap, look who we're packing. We'll punch through that shit.
Bloody damn right, Julii. Severo moves toward the door. Screwface, bring the pink and stow him.
Fangs out.
Ragnar, Victra in front. Blood's coming.
One level down, we meet our first security team. Half a dozen lurchers stand in front of a large glass door that ripples like the surface of a pond. They wear black suits instead of military armor. Implants in the shape of silver heels stick out from the skin behind their left ears. There's more patrolling this level, but no servants. Several greys in similar suits took a coffee cart into the room a few minutes earlier. Strange that they wouldn't use pinks or browns for delivering coffee. Security is tight, so whoever is in Quicksilver's office must be important, or at least very paranoid.
We're flowing quick,
Severo says, leaning back around the hallway corner where we wait 30 meters from the group of greys.
Neutralize those shitheads, then breach fast-like.
We don't know who's in there, Clown says.
And there's only one way to find out,
Severo barks.
Go!
Ragnar and Victra go first around the corner, ghost cloaks bending the light. The rest of us follow at a dead sprint. One of the greys squints down the hall at us. The implanted thermal optics in his irises throb red as they activate and see the heat radiating from our battery packs.
Ghost cloaks! He shouts.
Six sets of practiced hands flow to scorchers. Far too late. Ragnar and Victra tear into them. Ragnar swings his razor, cutting off one's arm and severing the jugular of another.
Blood sprays over the glass walls. Victra fires her silenced scorcher. Magnetically hurled slugs slam into two heads. I slide forward between falling bodies, stick my razor through a man's ribcage, feeling the pop and give of his heart. I retract my blade into whip form to free it. Let it stiffen again back to my sling blade before the man drops. The Greys haven't managed to fire a single shot, but one has pressed a button on his datapad, and the deep throbbing sound of the tower's alarm echoes down the hall. The walls pulse red, signalling an emergency. Severo cuts the last man down. "Breach the room! Now!" he shouts. Something's wrong. I feel it in my gut, but Victra and Severo are propelling this forward, and Ragnar's kicking in the door. Ever a slave to momentum, I plunge in after him. Quicksilver's conference room is less flamboyant than the rooms above. Its ceiling is 10 meters high. Its walls are of digital glass that swirls subtly with silver smoke. Two rows of marble pillars run parallel on either side of a giant onyx conference table with a dead white tree rising from its center. At the far end of the room, a huge viewing window looks out at the industry of the hive. Regulus Ag Sun, hailed from Mercury to Pluto as Quicksilver, richest man under the sun, stands before the window, mauling a glass of red wine with a fleshy hand. He's bald, forehead wrinkled as a washboard, pugilist lips, hunched simian shoulders leading to butcher fingers that sprout from the sleeves of a high-collared Venusian turquoise robe embroidered with apple trees. He's in his 60s, skin bronzed with a marrow-deep tan. A small goatee and moustache accent his face in a vain attempt to give it shape, though it seems he's stayed away from carvers for the most part. His feet are bare. But it's his three eyes that demand attention. Two are heavy-lidded and silver, an earthy, efficient shade. The third is gold, and implanted in a simple silver ring the man wears on the middle finger of his fat right hand. We've interrupted his meeting. Nearly 30 coppers and silvers pack the room. They're formed into two parties and sit across from one another at a giant's onyx table littered with coffee cups, wine carafes, and data pads. A blue holo document floats in the air between the two factions, obviously the object of their attention, until the door shattered inward. Now they push back from the table, most too stunned yet to feel fear, or to even see us as the howlers enter the room in ghost cloaks. But it isn't just coppers and silvers at the table.
"Oh, shit!"
Victor sputters. Among the professional colors rise 6 golden knights in full pulse armor. And I know them all. On the left, a dark-faced older man wearing the pure black armor of the Death Knight. On either side of him, a pudgy-faced Moira, a fury, sister of Aja, and good old Cassius Au Bellona. To the right are Cavax Au Telemanus, Daxo Au Telemanus, and the girl who left me on my knees in the old mining tunnels of Mars nearly 1 year ago. Mustang. Chapter 17. Killing Golds.
"Hold your fire!" I shout, pushing down Victra's weapon, but Severo's barking orders, and Victra brings her weapon back up. We form a staggered line with our pulse fists and scorchers aimed at the golds. We hold fire because we need Quicksilver alive, and I know Severo's as stunned as I to see Mustang, Cassius, and the Telemanuses here.
"On the ground, or we waste you!"
Severo screams, voice inhuman and magnified by his demon helm. The howlers join him, filling the air with a harpy's chorus of commands. My blood pumps cold. The alarm throbs around the roaring voices. Not knowing what to do,
I point my pulse fist at the most dangerous gold in the room, Cassius, knowing what must be going through Severo's mind as he sees his father's killer in the flesh. My helmet sinks with the weapon, to illuminate weak points in his armor, but my eyes drink in Mustang as she sets down a cup of coffee, graceful as ever, and steps back from the table, the pulse fist implanted in the left gauntlet of her armor slowly beginning to blossom open. My mind and heart war against each other. What the hell is she doing here? She's supposed to be in the rim. Like her, the other ghouls aren't listening to us. They don't know who we are past our helmets. No wolf cloaks today. They step back, eyes wary, judging the situation. Cassius's razor slithers on his right arm. Kavax slowly lifts himself from his chair along with Daxo. Quicksilver waves his hands frantically.
Stop! He shouts, voice nearly lost in the chaos. Do not fire! This is a diplomatic meeting. Identify yourselves.
We've stumbled into the middle of some negotiation, I realize. A surrender of Mustang's forces. An alliance. Noticeably absent is the Jackal. Is Quicksilver betraying him? He must be. So must the Sovereign. That's why this place is so deserted. No servants, minimum security. Quicksilver wanted only men he trusted at this meeting, held so close under his ally's nose. My stomach lurches as I realize the rest of the room must think we're bone riders, which means they think we're here to kill them, and this is only going to end one way.
On the bloody damn ground!
Victor bellows.
What do we do? Pebble asks over the comm.
Reaper? I claim the Bellona, Severo says. Use stun weapons, I say. It's Mustang. Won't do shit against that armor,
Severo interrupts.
If they lift their weapons, kill the pricks. Full pulse charges. I'm not risking any of our family.
Severo, listen to me. We need to talk. My words cut short because he uses the master command built into his helmet to jam my comm output signal. I can hear them, but they can't hear me. I curse futilely at him.
Bellona, stop moving! Clown shouts. I said stop!
Opposite Mustang, Cassius silently drifts through the silvers, using them as cover to close the gap between us. He's only 10 meters away, getting closer. I sense Victra tensing beside me, hungry to be let loose on one of the men who she blames for her mother's death. But there's civilians between us and the Golds, and Quicksilver's a prize we can't afford to lose. My eyes judge the plump cheeks of the silvers and coppers. Not a soul here is oppressed. Not a belly here has ever been hungry. These are collaborators. Severo would scalp them one by one if given a rusty knife and a few idle hours.
Reaper,
Ragnar says quietly, looking to me for instruction.
Take your hand away from the razor! Victor shouts at Cassius.
He stays quiet, coming forward, certain as a glacier. Moira and the Death Knight follow after him. Kavax's helmet is slithering up to cover his head. Mustang's face is already covered, her pulse fist active and pointed at the ground. I know death well enough to hear it gather its breath. I activate my external speakers.
Kavax! Mustang, stop! It's me! It's... Stop moving, you piece of shit!
Victor snarls. Cassius smiles pleasantly as he lunges forward. Ragnar makes a weird twisting movement to my left, and one of the two razors he carries flies through the air and skewers the Death Knight through his forehead. The silvers gape at the famous Olympic Knight, teetering to the ground.
Kavax au Telemanus!
Kavax roars and rushes forward with Daxo. Mustang breaks sideways. Moira charges, lifting her pulse fist.
Waste 'em,
Severo says with a snarl. The room erupts, air torn to shreds by superheated particles as the howlers open fire at point-blank range into the crowded room. Marble turns to dust, chairs melt into gnarled chunks of metal and kick across the floor. Meat and bone explode, filling the air with red mist as silvers and coppers are caught in the crossfire. Severo misses Cassius, who dives behind a pillar. Kavax is shot a dozen times, but he doesn't falter, even as his shields overheat. He's going to smash into Severo and Victra with his razor when Ragnar charges from the side and hits the smaller man so hard with his shoulder that Kavax is lifted clean off his feet. Daxo attacks Ragnar from behind, and three giants tumble to the side of the room, crushing two scrabbling coppers, half their size as they go. The coppers scream on the ground, legs shattered. Behind Kavax, Mustang takes two shots to the chest, her pulse shield holds. She stumbles, fires back at us, hitting Pebble in her thigh. Pebble's lifted backward and flipped into the wall, legs shattered from the blast. She screams and clutches at it. Clown and Victor cover her, firing back at Mustang, dragging Pebble behind a pillar. Screwface and four other howlers, who guarded the door and kept Mateo outside, now fire into the room from the hallway. I stumble sideways, lost in the chaos, as the marble where I stood shatters. Silvers scramble under the table. Others kick away from their chairs, racing for the imagined safety of the columns on the fringes of the room. Hypersonic pulse fire rips between them, over their heads, through them, buckling the columns. Quicksilver runs behind two coppers, using them as human shields, when shrapnel rips into them, and they all tumble down in a mess of limbs and blood. Moira, the Fury, rushes Severo to impale my friend from behind with her razor as he tries to move past Ragnar, who's fighting both Telemannuses, to get at Cassius. I fire my pulse fist point blank into her side just before she reaches him. Her armor's pulse shield absorbs the first few rounds, rippling blue in a cocoon around her. She stumbles sideways, and if I did not continue to fire, she'd have nothing but a bruise in the morning. But my middle finger is heavy on the trigger of the weapon. She's an engineer of oppression, and one of the best mines of gold. And she tried to kill Severo. Bad play. I fire till her shields buckle inward, till she falls to a knee, till she twitches and screams as the molecules of her skin and organs superheat. Boiling blood comes out her eyes and nose. Armor and flesh fuse together, and I feel the rage ride wild inside me, numbing me to fear, to sense, to compassion. This is the Reaper who laid Cassius low, who slew Carnus, who gold cannot kill. Moira's pulse fist fires wildly as the tendons of her fingers contract in the heat, shooting into the ceiling on full automatic, twitching sideways, whipping a stream of death across the room. Two silvers, running for cover, explode. The glass of the viewport at the far end of the room, which looks out onto the space city, cracks perilously. Howlers scramble for cover till the pulse fist glows molten on Moira's left hand, and the barrel overheats to melt inward with a corrupt fizzle. With that last gasp of rage, the wisest of the Sovereign's three Furies lies in a charred husk. My only wish is that it could have been Aja. I turn back to the room, feeling the cool hand of Wrath guiding me, hungering for more blood. But all those that are left are my friends, or once were. I shudder with hollowness as the rage leaves me as fast as it came, replaced by panic as I watch my friends try to kill one another. The ordered lines have broken down into a high-tech brawl, feet sliding on glass, shoulder blades slamming into walls, pulse fist battles between pillars, hands and knees scrambling against the floor as pulse fists wail and blades clamour and hack. And it's only now, only with this terrifying clarity, that I realise that there is only one common thread that binds them. It's not an idea. It's not my wife's dream. Not trust or alliances or colour. It's me. And without me, this is what they will do. Without me, this is what Severo has been doing. What an inevitable waste it seems. Death begets death begets death. I have to stop it. At the center of the room, Cassius stumbles after Victor through twisted chairs and shattered glass. Blood slicks the floor beneath them. Her damaged ghost cloak sparks on and off, and she flashes between ghost and shadow like an undecided demon. Cassius cuts her again across the thigh and spins as Clown shoots at him, cutting Clown across the side of his head before bending back to dodge a shot from Pebble on the ground across the room. Victra rolls under the table to escape Cassius, slicing at his ankles. He jumps onto the table, firing his pulse fist into the onyx till it caves in the center, trapping her beneath. He's inches from killing her when Severo shoots him from behind, the blast absorbed by Cassius's shield, but one that knocks him several meters to the side. To the right, Ragnar, Daxo, and Kavax fight a duel of titans. Ragnar pins Kavax's arm to the wall with his razor, leaves the weapon, ducks, fires his pulse fist into Daxo at point-blank range. Daxo's shields absorb the blast, and his razor misses Ragnar and takes out a chunk of the wall instead. Ragnar hits Daxo in his joints and is about to snap his neck when Kavax skewers him through the shoulder with a razor, screaming his family name. I rush to help my stained friend, but as I do, I feel someone to my left. I turn just in time to see Mustang flying through the air at me, her helmet covering her face, her razor arching down to cut me in two. I bring my own razor up just in time. Blades slam together. Vibrations rattled down my arm. I'm slower than I remember. Much of my muscle instinct lost to the darkness despite Mickey's lab and my training bouts with Victra. Plus, Mustang's gotten faster. I'm pressed back. I try to flow around Mustang, but she moves her razor like she's been at war for the last year. I try to slip to the side, like Lorne taught me, but there's no escape. She's smart, using the rubble, the pillars, to corner me. I'm being hemmed in, corralled by the flashing metal. My defense doesn't cave, but it erodes along the edges as I protect my core. The blade parts an inch-deep gash through my left shoulder, stings like a pit viper bite. I curse, and she slices through more flesh. I'd shout at her to stop, shout my name, something, if I had even half a second to breathe, but it's all I can do to keep my arms moving. I bend back just in time as she cuts a shallow gash through the neck of my scarab skin. Three quick cuts at the tendons of my right arm follow, just missing, building a rhythm. My back's touching the wall. Cut, cut, stab. Fire opening up my skin. I'm going to die here. I call for help over my comm, but they're still jammed by Severo. We've bitten off more than we can chew. I scream in futility as Mustang's blade scrapes through three of my ribs. She spins the blade in her hand, swings backhanded to cut my head off. I manage to deflect the razor into the wall with mine, pinning it above my head so her helmet is near my mask. I headbutt her, but her helmet's stronger than the composite duroplastic of my mask. She reels back her own head and slams it into mine, using my own tactic. A seam of pain splinters down my skull. I nearly black out. Vision rushing out, in. Still standing. Feel part of my mask crack off and slide off my face. Nose broken again. Seeing spots. The rest of the mask crumbles, and I stare at the death-eyed horse helmet of Mustang as she prepares to end me. Her razor arm draws back to deliver the killing stroke, and it stays there, above her head, trembling as she looks at my exposed face. Her helmet slithers away to reveal her own. Sweat-soaked hair clings to her forehead, darkening the golden luster. Beneath, her eyes are wild, and I wish I could say it's love or joy I see in them. But it's not. If anything, it's fear. Maybe horror that draws the blood from her face as she stumbles back, gesturing speechlessly with her offhand. Darrow? She looks over her shoulder to see the mayhem that still grips the room. Our quiet moment, a little bubble in the storm. Cassius flees, disappearing through a side door, leaving the corpse of the Death Knight and Moira behind. Our eyes meet before he disappears. Victra gives chase until Severo reels her back in. The rest of the howlers are turning toward Mustang. I take a step toward her and stop
when the tip of her razor pricks my collarbone. I saw you die.
She backs away toward the main door, boots sliding over the marble, crunching on bits of glass from the walls.
Kavax! Daxo!
She calls, a vein in her neck bulging from strain.
Pull back!
The Telemannuses scramble to separate themselves from Ragnar, confused at who the masked man they are fighting is, and why they're bleeding in so many places. They try to regroup on Mustang, both men rushing for her in a hasty retreat, but as they pass me to join her near the door, I know I can't just watch her go, so I whip my razor around Kavax's neck. He gags and reels against me, but I hold on. With the press of a button, I could retract my whip and sever his head. But I've no interest in killing the man. He falls only when Ragnar sweeps his leg and puts a knee into his chest, slamming to the floor. Screwface and the others are on him, pinning him down.
Don't kill him! I shout.
Screwface knew Pax. He's met the Telemannuses, so he holds his blade and snaps at the newer howlers to do the same. Daxo tries to rush to his father's aid, but Ragnar and I bar his way. His bright eyes stare in confusion at my face.
Go, Virginia!
Kavax roars from the ground.
Flee!
I have the Pax. Orion is alive, Mustang says, eyeing the bloody howlers who are at my back, coming for her and Daxo.
Don't kill him. Please.
And then, with a sorrowful look to Kavax, she flees the room. Chapter 18. Abyss.
What did she mean Orion's alive? I ask Kavax.
He's as shell-shocked as I am, nervously eyeing the black-clad howlers prowling through the room. We didn't lose one, but we're in shit shape.
Kavax!
What she said, he rumbles.
Exactly what she said. The Pax is safe. Darrow!
Severo shouts as he re-enters the room with Victra. They pursued Cassius through the blackened door on the far side of the room, but return empty-handed and limping.
On me!
There's more I want to ask, Kavax, but Victra's wounded. I rush to her as she leans against the shattered onyx table, hunched over a deep gash in her biceps. Her mask's off, face twisted and sweating, as she injects herself with painkillers and blood coagulant to stem the flow from the wound. I see the hint of bone through the blood.
Victor.
Shit,
she says with a dark laugh.
Your boyfriend is faster than he used to be. Almost got him in the hall, but I think Aja taught him a little of your willow way.
Look like, I say. You prime.
Don't worry about me, darling.
She gives me a wink as Severo calls my name again. He and Clown are bent over Moira's smoking remains. The terrorist lord is unfazed by the carnage around us.
One of the Furies, Clown says. Roasted.
Good cooking, Reap, Severo drawls. Crispy on the edges, bloody down the middle. Just how I like.
Aja's gonna be pissed.
You cut my comms,
I interrupt angrily.
You were acting a bitch, confusing my men.
Acting a bitch? The hell is wrong with you? I was using my head instead of just shooting everything. We could have done without murdering half the damn room.
His eyes are darker and crueler than those of the friend I remember.
This is war, boyo. Murder's the name of the game. Don't be sad we're good at it.
That was Mustang, I say, stepping close to him. What if we killed her?
He shrugs. I poke his chest.
Did you know she would be here?
Tell me the truth.
Nah, he says slowly. Didn't know.
Now back up, boyo.
He looks up at me impudently, like he wouldn't mind taking a swing. I don't back up.
What was she doing here? How the hell would I know?
He looks past me to Ragnar, who is pushing Kavax back toward the howlers, gathering in the center of the room.
Everyone prepare to squab out.
We're going to have to cut through an army to get out of this shit den. Evac point is 10 floors up on the black side.
Where's our prize? Victor asks, eyeing the carnage.
Bodies litter the ground, silvers shivering in pain, coppers crawling across the floor, dragging broken legs. Probably fried, I say.
Prolly, Clan agrees, casting me a commiserating look as we move from Severo to pick through the bodies.
It's a slagging mess.
Did you know Mustang would be here? I ask.
Not at all. Seriously, boss.
He glances back at Severo. What did you mean he jammed your comms?
Stop jawing and find the bloody damn silver!
Severo barks from the center of the room.
Somebody grab the pink from the hall!
Clan finds Quicksilver at the opposite end of the room, farthest from the hallway door, to the right of the grand viewport that looks down onto Phobos. He's lying motionless, pinned under a pillar that broke from its place in the floor to fall sideways against the wall. The blood of others covers his turquoise tunic. Bits of glass jut from wounded knuckles. I feel his pulse. He's alive. So the mission wasn't a damn waste, but there's a contusion on his forehead from shrapnel. I call Ragnar and Victor, the two strongest of our party, to help pry the pillar off the man. Ragnar wedges the razor he threw into the knight's head under the pillar, using a rock as a fulcrum, and is about to heave upward with me when Victor calls for us to wait.
Look, she says.
Where the pillar's top meets the wall, there's a faint blue glow along the seam that runs from the floor up the wall to form a rectangle in the wall. It's a hidden door. Quicksilver must have been rushing toward it when the pillar fell. Victor puts her ear against the door, and her eyes narrow.
Pulse torches, she says.
Oh-ho! She laughs. Silver's bodyguards are through there. Must have hid them in case things got tense.
They're speaking Nagal.
The language of the Obsidians. And they're cutting their way through the wall. We'd be dead if the pillar hadn't fallen and blocked the door. Pure luck saved our hides. All three of us know it. And it deepens the anger I have with Severo and calms a bit of the wildness in Victor's eyes. Suddenly she's seeing how reckless this was. We never should have rushed into this place without its blueprints. Severo did what I would have done a year ago. Same result. The three of us share a common thought, glancing at the main door of the room. We don't have long. Ragnar and Victor help me pry Quicksilver free. The unconscious man's legs drag behind him, broken, as Victor carries him back to the center of the room. There, Severo is readying Clown and Pebble to push out from the room with our prisoners, Matteo and Kavax, who stares at me open-mouthed. But Pebble can't even stand. We're all in shit shape.
We've too many prisoners, I say. We won't be able to move fast, and we don't have any EMPs this time.
Not that they do anyone any good on a space station when all that separates us from space is inch-thin bulkheads and air recyclers.
Then we trim the fat, Severo says, stalking toward Kavax, who sits wounded and bound with his hands behind his back. He points his pulse fist into Kavax's face.
Nothing personal, big man.
Severo pulls the trigger. I shove him sideways. The pulse blast misses Kavax's head and slams into the ground near the slumped form of Matteo, nearly taking off the man's leg. Severo wheels on me, pulse fist pointing at my head.
Get that out of my face, I say down the barrel, heat radiating into my eyes, causing them to sting so I have to look away.
Who do you think that is?
Severo snarls.
Your friend?
He's not your friend. We need him alive. He's a chip to barter. And Orion might be alive.
Chip to barter, Severo snorts. What about Moira? Had no problem frying her, but you spare him?
Severo squints at me, lowering his weapon. His lips curl back from his janky teeth.
Oh, it's for Mustang.
Of course it is. He's Pax's father, I say. And Pax is dead. Why? 'Cause you let enemies live. This isn't the Institute, Boyle. This is war. He jams a finger in my face. And war is really bloody damn simple. Kill the enemy when you can, however you can, as fast as you can, or they kill you and yours. Severo turns from me, realizing now that the others are watching us with growing trepidation. You're wrong about this, I say.
We can't drag them with us.
Halls are swarming, boss, Screwface says, returning from the main hall. More than 100 security personnel. We're slagged.
We can cut through them if we go light, Severo says.
100? Clown says.
Boss, check your juice packs,
Severo says, squinting at his pulse fist.
No, I'll not let Severo's short-sightedness ruin us. Slag that, I say.
Pebble, hail Holiday. Tell her evac is squabbed. Give her our coordinates. She's to park 1 kilometer beyond the glass, ass end our way.
Pebble doesn't reach for her datapad. She glances at Severo, torn between us, not knowing who to follow.
I'm back, I say. Now do it.
Do it, Pebble, Ragnar says.
Victor gives a small nod. Pebble grimaces at Severo.
Sorry, Severo.
She nods to me and opens up her comm to hail Holiday. The rest of the Howlers look to me, and it hurts knowing I've made them choose like this.
Clown, grab Mora's datapad, if it isn't fried, and get the data from the console if you can. I want to know what contract we were negotiating, I say quickly.
Screwface, take Sleepy and cover the hall. Ragnar, Kavax is yours. He tries to flee, cut his feet off. Victra, you got any repelling line left?
She checks her belt and nods.
Start tying us together. Everyone in the center of the room has to be tight.
I turn to Severo.
Lay charges at the door. Company's coming.
He says nothing.
It's not anger behind his eyes. It's the secret seeds of self-doubt and fear coming to blossom. Hate seeping into his eyes. I know the look. I've felt it on my own face too many times to count. I'm ripping away the only thing he's ever cared about. His Howlers. After all he's done, I make them choose me over him, when he doesn't trust I'm ready. It's an indictment of his leadership, a validation of the intense self-doubt I know he must feel in the wake of his father's passing. It shouldn't have been that way. I said I'd follow, and I didn't. That's on me. But this isn't the time for coddling. I've tried words with him, tried using our friendship to make him see reason, but since I've been back, I've seen him respond to things only with violence and force. So now, I'll speak his bloody damn language. I step forward. Unless you want to die here, sack up and get moving. His wrinkled little face hardens as he watches his Howlers run to do my bidding. You get them killed. I'll never forgive you. Makes two of us. Now go.
He turns away, running toward the door to plant the remaining explosives from his belt. I remain looking around the broken room, finally seeing organization in the chaos, as my friends work together. They'll all have deduced my plan by now. They know how manic it is. But the confidence with which they work breathes life into me. They put trust in me that Severo wouldn't. Still, I catch Ragnar glancing at the viewport 3 times now. All our suits are compromised. Not one of us will be able to stay pressurized in vacuum. I don't even have a mask. Whether we live or die is up to Holiday. I wish there was some way I could control the variables, but if the time in darkness taught me anything, it's that the world is larger than my grasp. Have to trust others.
Jammers on everyone, I say, toggling my own on my belt.
Don't want the cameras outside spotting anyone's exposed faces.
Holiday's in position,
Pebble says.
I glance out the window to see the transport hovering a click beyond the window.
hardly larger than a pen tip at this distance.
On my mark, we're going to fire at the center of the viewport, I tell my friends, making an effort to keep the fear from my voice. Screwface, Sleepy, get back here. Put your masks on the unconscious prisoners.
Oh, gory hell, Victor mutters. I was hoping you had a better plan than that.
If you try to hold your breath, your lungs will explode, so exhale as soon as the viewport shatters. Let yourself pass out. Have sweet dreams and pray for Holiday to be as quick on the stick as Clown is in the bedroom. They laugh and cluster tight, letting Victor wind her rappelling line through our munitions belts so we're together like grapes on a vine. Severo's finishing laying the explosives at the door. Sleepy and Screwface join us, waving at him to hurry.
Attention!
A voice booms from hidden speakers in the walls as Victor leans close to me to link me with Ragnar.
This is Alec T. Yamato, head of security for Sun Industries. You are surrounded. Discard your weapons. Release your hostages, or we will be forced to fire on you. You have 5 seconds to comply.
There's no one in the room but us. The main doors are closed. Severo runs back to us from laying the charges.
Severo, fast-like! I shout.
He's not halfway to us when he crumples to the ground like an empty can crushed by a boot. I'm slammed down to the floor by the same force, knees buckling, bones, lungs, throat all stomped down by massive gravity. My vision swims, blood moving sluggishly to my head. I try to lift my arm. It weighs more than 300 pounds. Security has increased the artificial gravity in the room, and only Ragnar's not on his belly. He's fallen to a knee, shoulders hunched and straining like Atlas holding up the world.
The hell is that?
Victor manages, on the floor, looking past me to the door. It's opened, and through it comes not a grey, or an obsidian, or gold, but a giant black egg the size of a small man, rolling sideways. It's smooth and glossy, and small white numbers mark its side. A robot, as illegal as EMPs. Augustus's great fear. Like reaching out of an oil spill, the metal morphs at the point of the egg to reveal a small cannon, which aims at Severo. I try to rise, try to aim my pulse fist, but the gravity is too much. I can't even lift my arm to point the weapon. For all her strength, Victor can't either. Severo's grunting on the floor, crawling away from the machine.
The viewport,
I manage.
Ragnar, fire at the viewport.
His pulse fist is at his side. Straining, he begins to lift it against the massive gravity, arm shaking, throat gargling that eerie war chant that sounds like a distant avalanche. The sound rises, an otherworldly bellow, till his whole body convulses with effort and his arm draws level, and the smallest of stars is born in his palm as the grav fist gathers its trembling molten charge. The entirety of my friend shudders, and his fingers release the trigger. His arm wrenches back. The pulse fire leaps forward to scream into the center of the glass pane. The many stars ripple as the pane bends outward, and cracks shoot down the window.
Gardir Nyar Laga,
Ragnar bellows, and the glass shatters. Space drinks the air of the room. Everything slides. A copper flips past us, screaming. She goes silent when she hits vacuum. Others who cowered during our brawl cling to the broken table in the center of the room. They wrap themselves around pillars, fingers bleeding, nails cracking, legs flailing. Grips giving out. Corpses flip end over end out into space as the abyss hungers for everything the building has. Severo's ripped into the air, away from the robot, lighter than our combined group. I reach for him and grab his short mohawk till Victra wraps her legs around him and pulls him to our body. I'm terrified as we slide toward the broken viewport, hands shaking,
doubting my decision as I now stare it in the face. Severo was right. We should have pushed into the building. Killed Kavaks or used him as a shield. Anything but the cold. Anything but the jackal's darkness from which I only just escaped. It's just fear, I tell myself. It's just fear making me panic, and it spread through my friends. I see the horror on their faces, how they look back at me and see that fear reflected in my own. I cannot be afraid. I spent too long being afraid, too long being diminished by loss, too long being everything except what I need to be. And whether I am the Reaper or whether it's just another mask, it's one I must wear, not just for them, but for myself.
Omnis vir lupus,
I shout, kicking my head back to howl, exhaling all the air in my lungs. Beside me, Ragnar's eyes widen in wild ecstasy. He opens his massive mouth and bellows out a howl to make his ancestors hear him from their icy crypts. Then Pebble joins, and Clown, and even Regal Victra. It's rage and fear leaving our bodies, though space drags us across the floor to its embrace, though death might come for us. I am home in this weird, screaming mass of humanity, and as we pretend to be brave, we become so. All except Severo, who remains silent as we fly into space. Chapter 19. Pressure. We rip through the broken viewport into vacuum at 80 kilometers an hour. Silence swallows our howling. A shock hits my body like a fallen into cold water. My body twitches. The oxygen expands in my blood, forcing my mouth to hiccup for air that isn't there. Lungs don't inflate. They're collapsed, fibrous sacs. My body jerks, desperate for oxygen. But as the seconds tick by, and I see the inhuman metal of Phobos's skyscrapers, and watch my friends linked together in the darkness, held together by hands and bits of wire, a stillness settles over me. The same stillness that came in the snows with Mustang. That came when the howlers and I hunkered tight in the gulches of the Institute to roast goat meat and listen to Quinn tell her stories. I sink slowly into another memory. Not of Lycos or Io or Mustang, but of the cold Academy hangar bay where Victra, Tactus, Roke and I first learned from a pale blue professor what space does to a man's body. Ebullism, or the formation of bubbles in body fluids due to reduced ambient pressure, is the most severe component of vacuum exposure. Water in the tissues of your body will vaporize, causing gross swelling. My darling airhead, I'm well accustomed to gross swelling. Just ask your mother. And your father. And your sister. I hear Tactus say in the memory. And I remember Roke's laugh. How his cheeks blushed at the crudeness of the joke, which makes me wonder why he stood so close to Tactus, why he cared so much about our bawdy friend's drug use, and then wept by Tactus's bedside when he lay dead. The teacher continues, and multiplicative increase in body volume in 10 seconds, followed by circulatory failure. I feel sleepy, even as pressure builds in my eyes, warping my vision and distending the tissue there. Pressure builds in my freezing fingers and aching, popped eardrums. My tongue is huge and cold, like an ice serpent slithering through my mouth into my belly as liquid evaporates. Skin stretches, inflating. My fingers are plantains. Gas in my stomach ballooning my gut. Darkness coming to claim me. I glimpse Severo beside me. His face is freakish, swollen to twice its normal size. Legs still wrapped around him, Victra looks like a monster. She's awake and staring at him with cartoonish, bloodshot eyes, hiccuping for oxygen like a fish out of water. Their hands tighten around each other's.
Water and dissolved gas in the blood forms bubbles in your major veins, which travel throughout the circulatory system, obstructing blood flow and delivering unconsciousness in 15 seconds.
My body fades, seconds becoming an eternal twilight. Everything slowed, everything so pointless and poignant, as I see how ridiculous our human strength is in the end. Take us from our bubbles of life, and what are we?
The metal towers around us look carved of ice. The lights and flashing HC screens, like the scales of dragons frozen inside them.
Mars is over our heads, consuming and omnipotent. But in Phobos's fast rotation, we're already nearing a place on the planet where dawn comes and light carves a crescent into the darkness.
Molten wounds still glow where 2 nuclear bombs detonated. And I wonder, in my last moments, if the planet does not mind that we wound her surface or pillage her bounty, because she knows we silly, warm things are not even a breath in her cosmic life. We have grown and spread and will rage and die. And when all that remains of us is our steel monuments and plastic idols, her winds will whisper, her sands will shift. Then she will spin, and on, forgetting about the bold, hairless apes who thought they deserved immortality.
I'm blind, awake on metal, feel plastic against my face, gasping around me, bodies moving, the coldness of a shuttle engine rumbling under the deck. My body seizes and shivers. I suck down the oxygen. It feels like my head has caved in. The pain is everywhere and fading with each pulse of my heart. My fingers are the normal size. I rub them together, trying to orient myself. I'm shivering, but there's a thermal blanket on me, unsentimental hands rubbing me to promote circulation. To my left, I hear Pebble calling for Clown. We're all blind for several minutes as our optic nerves recalibrate. He answers her groggily, and she nearly breaks down crying.
Victra! Severo's slurring. Wake up! Wake up!
Gear rattles as he shakes her.
Wake up!
He slaps her face. She wakes with a gasp.
The hell? Did you just hit me?
I thought... She slaps him back.
Who is that?
I ask the hands that rub my shoulders through the blanket.
Holiday, sir. We scooped you popsicles up 4 minutes ago.
How long were we out there?
About 2 minutes, 30 seconds. It was a shit show. We had to empty the cargo bay and have the pilot fly backward into you, then pressurize it on the fly. These carrots can't soldier, but they can damn well steer garbage ships. Still, if you hadn't been linked, most of you would be dead as lead.
There's rubble and corpses floating around the sector now. HC crews crawling everywhere.
Ragnar?
I ask fearfully, not having heard him yet.
I am here, my friend. The Abyss will not claim us yet.
He begins to laugh.
Not just yet.
Chapter 20. Descent. We're in trouble, and Severo knows it. Seizing command back from me as soon as we land in the dilapidated docking berth of a Sons of Ares safehouse deep in industrial sector, he orders the still unconscious Mateo and Quicksilver to the infirmary to be woken up, Kavax to a cell, and tells Rolo and the Sons to prepare for an assault. The Sons stare at us, dumbstruck. Our obsidian disguises are obliterated, particularly mine. The prosthetics on my face have fallen off in the battle. Contacts sucked off in the vacuum. Black hair dye thinned out from sweat. Still got my gloves, though. But these Sons don't look at a pack of obsidians now. They're staring at a cadre of golds, an obsidian, a grey, and at least one ghost.
The Reaper,
someone whispers. Keep your mouth shut, Clown snaps. Not a word to anyone.
Whatever he says, soon the rumor will spread among them. The Reaper lives. Whatever the effect it'll have, it's not the right time. We may have avoided police pursuit, but such a high-profile kidnapping, not to mention the assassination of two high-level peerless, will ensure that the full analytical weight of the Jackal's counter-terrorism units is brought to bear on the evidence. Praetorian and Securitas anti-terrorism tech squads will already be poring over the footage of the attack. They'll discover how we gained access to the facility, how we made our escape, and who our likely compatriots were. Every weapon, piece of equipment, ship used will be traced to its source. Society reprisals against low colors throughout the station will be swift and brutal. And when they analyze the visual evidence of our little vacuum escape, they'll see my face and Severo's. Then Jackal himself will come, or he'll send Antonia or Lilith to hunt me down with their bone riders. The clock's ticking. But that's supposing the authorities suspect that only Quicksilver was kidnapped. I don't know why Mustang and Cassius were meeting, but I have to assume the Jackal doesn't know about it. That's why I used our jammers, so the security cameras outside of Quicksilver's control wouldn't ID Kavox. If the Jackal saw him here, he'd know something was amiss with his alliance with the Sovereign and Quicksilver. And I want to keep that card in my pocket till I know how best to use it and can speak with Mustang. But what will the Sovereign think when Cassius calls her to tell her Moira is dead? And what is Mustang's place here? There are too many questions. Too many things I don't know. But what haunts me, as we run down metal halls, as my friends go to patch wounds and we pass armories where dozens of reds and browns and oranges load weapons and buckle armor, is what she said. I have the packs. Orion is alive. With her, that could mean a dozen things, and the only one who will know is Kavox. I need to ask him, but Ragnar's already taken him down another hall to the sun's lockup, and Severo's stopped rattling off orders to others to address me. Reap, they're gonna hit us, and hit us hard, he's saying. You know Legion military procedures better than I do. Get to the data center, fast-like. Give me a timetable and their plan of attack. We can't stop them, but we can buy time. Time for what? I ask. To blow the bombs and find a way off this rock. He puts a hand on my arm, just as cognizant of those suns watching as I am. Please. Get moving. He heads off down the hall with the rest of the Howlers, leaving me alone with Holiday. I turn to her. Holiday, you know Legion procedures. Get to the data center. Give the Suns the tactical support they need. She looks back down at the hall to where Severo has turned a corner. You good with that? I ask. Yes, sir. Where are you going? I tighten my gloves. To get answers.
Virginia told us you were a Red after she left you. That is why we did not come to your triumph.
Kavox says up to me. He's bound to a steel pipe, legs splayed out on the floor. Still in his armor, red gold beard dark in the low light. He cuts a menacing figure, but I'm surprised by the openness of his face, the lack of hatred. The clarity of excitement as his nostrils flare wide in recounting his tale to Ragnar and me. Severo told the Sons that no one was to see Kavox, but apparently they don't think the rules much apply to the Reaper. Good on that. I don't yet have a plan, but I know Severo's isn't working. I don't have time to navigate his feelings or struggle with him. The pieces are in motion. I need information.
She did not know yet what to do, and so took our counsel as she did as a girl.
Kavox continues.
We were on my ship, the Reynard, having roast mutton in ponzu sauce with Sophocles, though he did not like the sauce, when Aegea Command called, saying the Sovereign's loyalist forces had attacked the Triumph in Aegea. Virginia could not contact you or her father, and so feared a coup, and sent Daxo and I from orbit with our knights.
She stayed in orbit with the ships and finally contacted Roke when Daxo and I were already descending through atmosphere. Roke said the Sovereign had attacked the Triumph and wounded you and her father gravely. He urged her to come to one of his new ships, where he was taking you because the surface was no longer safe.
I remember Roke talking on the shuttle as the Jackal leaned over me, not being able to hear him. We landed on a ship. The Sovereign was there. She never left Mars. She was hiding in Roke's fleet, right under my nose.
But Virginia did not rush to your bedside.
He grins jovially.
A fool in love would do so, but Virginia is clever. She saw through Roke's mendacity. She knew the Sovereign would not simply attack the Triumph. It would be a plan within a plan. So she sent word to Orion and House Arcos that a coup was underway. That Roke was a conspirator. So when the assassin struck, attempting to kill Orion and the loyal commanders on their bridge, they were ready. There were firefights on bridges, in staterooms. Orion was badly shot in the arm, but she survived. And then Roke's ships opened fire on ours, and the fleet fractured.
All this while Severo and Ragnar were discovering that Fichtner was dead, and that the Sons of Ares base had been destroyed. And I lay paralyzed on the floor of Azure's shuttle as everything came apart. No. Not everything. She saved the crew's lives, I say.
Yes, Kavok says. Your crew is alive. The one you liberated with Severo. Even many of your legion, who we organized and managed to evacuate from Mars before the Jackal and Sovereign's forces took power.
Where are my friends imprisoned? I ask. On Ganymede? Io?
Imprisoned?
Kavok squints at me, then bursts into laughter.
No, lad, no! Not a man or woman has left their station. The Pax is just as you left it. Orion commands. The rest follow.
I don't understand. She's letting a blue command.
Do you think Virginia would have let you live in that tunnel when you and Ragnar were on your knees, if she did not believe in your new world?
I shake my head numbly, not knowing the answer.
She would have killed you on the spot if she thought you were her enemy. But when she sat before my hearth as a girl, beside Pax and my children, what stories did I read them? Did I read the myths of the Greeks? Of strong men gaining glory for their own heads? No. I told them tales of Arthur, of the Nazarene, of Vishnu. Strong heroes who wished only to protect the weak.
And Mustang has. More than that, she's proven Io right. And it wasn't because of me. It wasn't because of love. It was because it was the right thing to do. And because mighty Kavox was more a father to her than her own ever was. I feel the tears in my eyes.
You were right, Darrow,
Ragnar says. His hand falls on my shoulder.
The tide rises.
Then why are you here today, Kavox?
Because we are losing, he says. The Moon Lords will not last 2 months. Virginia knows what is happening on Mars. The extermination, the savagery of her brother. The Sons are too weak to fight everywhere.
His large eyes show the pain of a man watching his home burn. Mars is as much their heritage as it is mine.
The cost of war is too great for a certain defeat. So when Quicksilver proposed a peace, we listened.
And what are the terms? I ask.
Virginia and all her allies would be pardoned by the Sovereign. She would become Arch-Governor of Mars, and Adrius and his faction would be imprisoned for life. And certain reforms would be made.
But the hierarchy would remain.
Yes. If this is true, we must speak with her.
Ragnar says eagerly. It could be a trap, I say, watching Kavax, knowing the mind at work behind his bluff face. I want to trust him. I want to believe his sense of justice is equal to my love for him. But these are deep waters, and I know friends can lie just as well as enemies. If Mustang isn't on my side, then this would be the play to make. It would expose me. And there's no doubt in mind that however she got on this station, she's got a nasty escort. One thing doesn't make sense, Kavax. If this is true, why didn't you make contact with Severo? Kavax blinks up at me.
We did. Months ago. Didn't he tell you?
The Howlers are packing up by the time Ragnar and I rejoin them in the ready room.
It's all shit, Severo's saying as Victra patches a gash on his back with res flesh. Acrid smoke hisses up from the cauterizing wound. He throws down his data pad. It skitters into a corner, where Screwface collects it and brings it back to Severo.
They've grounded everything, including utility flights.
It's all right, boss. We'll find a way out, Clown says. I entered the room quietly, nodding to Severo that I'd like a word. He ignored me. His plan's a mess. We were due to stow ourselves away inside one of the empty helium haulers going back to Mars. We would have been gone before anyone even knew Quicksilver was kidnapped, and then detonated the bombs off station. Now, like Severo says, it's all shit.
We obviously can't stay here, Victor says, putting the res flesh applicator down. We left enough DNA for 100 crime scenes back there. And our faces are everywhere. Adris will send a whole legion for us when they find out we're here.
Or blow Phobos out of the sky, Holiday mutters. She sits on a crate of medical supplies in the corner, studying maps with Clown on her datapad. Pebble watches them from her place on the table. Her legs compressed with a gel cast, but the bones not set. We'll need a yellow and a full infirmary to fix what Mustang broke with a single shot. Pebble's lucky she was wearing scarab skin. It minimized the burn damage. Still, she's in pain. Pupils large on a high dose of narcotics. It's let her inhibitions loose, and I note how obviously the pudgy-faced gold is watching Clown lean across Holiday to point at the map.
Helium-3 is Adris's lifeblood, Victor says. He won't risk this station.
Severo, I say. A moment.
Busy right now.
He turns to Rolo.
Is there another way off this damn rock?
The red leans against the med room's grey wall next to a glossy paper cutout of a pink model on one of Venus's white sand beaches.
It's just cargo haulers down here, he says,
silently noting how our obsidian guises have been discarded. If it startles him how many of us are gold, he doesn't let on. Probably knew from the start. His eyes linger on me the longest.
But they're all grounded.
They got luxury liners and private yachts in the Needles, but you go up there, you folks are caught in a minute. Two tops. There's facial recognition cameras at every tram door. Retina scanners in the advertisement hollows. And even if you got onto one of their ships, you gotta get past the naval pickets.
Ain't like you can just teleport to safety.
That'd be convenient, Clown mutters. We jack a shuttle and run the pickets, Severo says. Done it before.
They'll shoot us down, I say tensely. It's pissing me off that he keeps ignoring my attempts to get him to the door.
Didn't last time.
Last time we had Lysander, I remind him.
And now we got Quicksilver. The Jackal will sacrifice Quicksilver to kill us, I say. Count on it. Not if we go straight vertical burn to the surface, Severo says. Suns have hidden tunnel entrances. We will fall from orbit and go straight underground.
I will not do that, Ragnar says. It is foolhardy. And it abandons these noble men and women to slaughter.
I agree with Rags, Holiday says.
She scoots away from Clown and continues looking at her datapad, monitoring police frequencies.
Say you get off. What happens to us?
Rollo asks.
The Jackal finds out the Reaper and Ares were here, and he'll tear this station apart piecemeal. Any son left behind will be dead in a week. Did you think of that?
He makes a disgusted look.
I know who you are. We knew the second Ragnar walked into the hangar. But I didn't think Howlers ran, and I didn't think the Reaper took orders.
Severo takes a step toward him.
You got another option, shitface? Are you just gonna run your mouth?
Yeah, I got one, Rollo says.
Stay. Help us take the station.
The Howlers laugh.
Take the station? With what army?
Clown asks.
His,
Rollo says, turning to me.
I don't rightly know how you're alive, Reaper, but I was eating noodles by myself at midnight when the Suns leaked your carving video onto the HoloNet. Society Cyber Police shut down the site in 2 minutes.
But once it was out, could find it on a million sites before I finished my bowl. They couldn't contain that. And then the Phobos servers crashed.
You know why?
Securitas Cyber Division pulled the plug, Victor says. It's standard protocol.
He shakes his head. Servers crashed because 30 million people were trying to access the HoloNet at the same time in the middle of the night. Servers couldn't handle the traffic. Golds pulled the plug after that. So what I'm saying is, if you march down to the Hive and tell the low-colors there you're alive, we can take this moon.
Easy as that?
Victor asks skeptically.
That's right. There's round about 25 million low-colors here, crawling over one another, fighting for square meters, protein packages, syndicate smack, whatever. Reaper shows his mug. All that goes to vapor. All that fighting. All that scrapping. They want a leader. And if the Reaper of Mars decides to come back from the dead here, you won't have an army. You'll have a tide at your heels. You register? This will change the war.
He sends chills down my spine. But Victor is skeptical and Severo's quiet. Hurt.
Do you know what a squad of society legionnaires can do to a mob of rabble?
Victor asks.
The weapons you've seen are geared to taking out men in armor. Pulse fists, razors. When they use coil guns or rattlers on mobs, a single man can fire 1,000 rounds a minute. It sounds like paper tearing.
Human body doesn't even know that sound is supposed to be frightening.
They can superheat the water in your cellular structure with microwaves. And those are just grey anti-mob squads. What if they unleash the obsidian? What if golds themselves come in their armor? What if they shut off your air, your water?
What if we shut off theirs? Rollo asks.
I frown. Can you do that?
Give me a reason to.
He looks at Victra, and by the bite in his voice, I know he knows exactly what her last name is.
They might be soldiers, Domina. Might be able to put enough metal in my body that I bleed out. But before I was 9, I could strip down a grav boot and piece it together in under 4 minutes. Now I'm 38, and I can murder the lot of them 10 ways till Sunday with a screwdriver and an electrical kit. And I'm sick and tired of not seeing my family, of being stepped on and charged for oxygen, for water, for living.
He leans forward, eyes glassy.
And there's 25 million of me on the other side of that door.
Victra rolls her eyes at the bravado.
You're a welder with delusions of grandeur.
Rollo steps forward and knocks a set of wrenches off a table. They clatter on the ground, startling Clown and Holiday, who look up from the datapad. Rollo stares up indignantly at Victra. She's easily a foot taller than him, but he doesn't break his gaze.
I'm an engineer, not a welder.
Enough! Severo snarls. This isn't a bloody damn debate. Quicksilver will get us off this rock, or I'll start taking off his fingers. Then blow the bombs.
Severo, Ragnar says.
I am Ares, Severo snarls. Not you!
He shoves a finger up into Ragnar's chest and then points at me. And not you. Finish packing the bloody damn gear. Now! He storms from the room, leaving us in awkward silence.
I will not abandon these men, Ragnar says. They have helped us. They are our people.
Ares is cracked, Rollo says to the room.
Off his mind. You need...
I wheel on the small man, picking him up with one hand and pinning him against the ceiling.
Don't you say a damn thing about him.
Rollo apologizes. I set him back on the ground. I make sure all the howlers are listening.
Everyone, stay put. I'll be right back.
I catch Severo before he enters Quicksilver's cell in a gutted old garage that the Suns use to house generators now. Severo and the guards turn when they hear me coming.
Don't trust me alone with him,
he sneers. Nice. We need to talk.
Sure, after he does.
Severo pushes open the door. Cursing, I follow. The room's a forlorn shade of rust, machines older than some of the gear in Lycos. One rattles behind the thick silver, coughing out the electricity that powers the lights, bathing the man in a circle of light, and blinding him to anything beyond it. Quicksilver sits with his shoulders back in the metal chair in the center of the room, arms bound behind his back. His turquoise robe is bloody and rumpled, bulldog eyes patient and measuring, wide foreheads covered in a thick sheen of sweat and grease.
Who are you?
He hisses in irritation instead of fear. The door slams shut behind us. The man seems rather irritated with his predicament, not disrespectful or angry, but professionally peeved at the meek measure of our hospitality and the inconvenience we've thrust upon him. He's not able to distinguish our faces due to the light blaring into his eyes.
Syndicate Teethman? Moon Lord Dustmakers?
When we say nothing, he swallows.
Adrius, is that you?
Chills creep down my spine. We say nothing. Only now, as he begins to suspect that we're the Jackal's men, does Quicksilver seem truly afraid. If we had time, we could use that fear, but we need information fast.
We need off this rock, Severo says gruffly. You're going to make that happen, Boyo, or I pull off your fingers one by one.
Boyo? Quicksilver murmurs.
I know you have an escape vessel. Contingency. Barker, is that you?
Severo's caught off guard.
It is you. Damn the stars, boy, you scared the shit out of me. I thought you were the gory damn Jackal. You have 10 seconds to give me something I can use, or I wear your ribcage as a corset.
Severo says, thrown by Quicksilver's familiarity. It's not his best threat. Quicksilver shakes his head.
You need to listen to me, Mr. Barker, and listen well. This is all a misunderstanding. A vast misunderstanding. I know you may not believe it. I know you may think me mad. But you must hear me. I am on your side. I am one of you, Mr. Barker.
Severo frowns.
One of us? What do you mean? What do I mean?
Quicksilver laughs gruffly.
I mean exactly as I say, young man. I, Regulus Agson, Chevalier of the Order of Coin, Chief Executive Officer of Sun Industries, am also a founding member of the Sons of Ares.